You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, friends, and welcome. Glad you could join me on this Memorial Day 2023. My special guest is Emmanuel Paris. He is from Trinidad and Tobago originally, but mostly Toronto. He was an Olympian Canadian sprinter, and he provides a lot of insight on this podcast episode, the sort of insight that people pay a lot of money for. So I took a lot of notes. I hope you get a chance to do so too. One of the notes I had gotten before we actually recorded, which is if there were just three exercises that you could do to stay in shape or get in shape, what would they be? And I got this from Huberman Lab, or Andrew Huberman. He was on Tim Ferriss's podcast. And the answer was sprinting. Another was dips. It's just coming to me. I think another one was maybe a deadlift of some sort, a compound movement. But I found sprinting to be so interesting because there was a time throughout human history where I'm sure, should we be chased by a tiger on the savannah, that we had to run upright and get the hell out of there as fast as possible. And what better way than to sprint? And it's the reason we have ass, actually. I don't know if many people know that, but it is so that we can run and escape, and it keeps us upright and going. And my guest today is an expert on the technique of running, and I would sacrifice a digit to have known him as an 8th, 9th, 10th grader so that I could perfect the techniques of running. Because I had no clue what I was doing. I was just running like I was running from the police, and it sometimes worked out for me. I stole bases and stuff like that, but maybe I would have stole a lot more if I had perfected my craft, but I didn't know where to go for that stuff. Well, now you'd go to Coach Powell. Our conversation is much broader than just performance specific, although that is his specialty. High performance. We have a wide-ranging discussion from dating, relationships, travel, stoicism, emotional intelligence, the sort of things that we enjoy talking about. And you'll hear how much it costs to live in Mexico, where he is now. We talk about how it's hard for him to date because he'll be approached by OnlyFans girls in both Miami, where he lived, and in Mexico now, asking him to be a prop. Like, hey, will you join my next session? I have a client who is requesting interracial, that sort of thing, because he's a big old black dude. I mean, the biggest black dude you've ever seen in your life. Basically. And the reason I know that is because my wife came home from the grocery store one night and she said, I saw the guy you recorded for the podcast. And I said, how can you be so sure? And she said, because he's the biggest guy I've ever seen in my life. He fit the criteria that you told me about him. And I said, yeah. It was confirmed later that she indeed saw him. So, great discussion. I want to say thank you to our sponsor, and the acronym is ITCS. I'm also an investor because when your first VA turns out to be a star, because according to her, she would really listen to what was being said on this podcast, for which she was paid to take notes. She just got the entrepreneurial bug. And special thanks to Man Overseas one-on-one coaching, which has been more than I could have hoped for. It gets better every year, and that's because the caliber of client gets better every year. So thank you to my clients. But for me, it's like laying out on the hood of my car and I'm at the end of the runway, like what I'm watching is these guys' careers and a few girls and relationships and bank accounts and investments and their spiritual life just take off and shoo, like one after another. And it's fucking beautiful. So thank you to the stud clients that I have who have bought into the fundamental blocking and tackling that I've implemented with them and in my own life. And it's enabled them to accomplish so much in so little time. And we're going to have a retreat later this year. I gave a sneak peek on Instagram stories into what we're looking at. It is legit. I haven't nailed down the place yet, but I've narrowed it down to where I can tell you what is chosen will be righteous and badass. Not to mention, we will be leaving the country for this. This isn't some middle of the mall shit where we go to Rockford, Missouri. No, we're gonna do it right. So I believe I've said enough. I want you to enjoy this conversation between Coach Powell and I as much as I did. And if you would be so kind, please take a few seconds out of your day to rate and review the show, comment, share it with a buddy, whatever you feel like doing. And of course, if there's anything that I can ever do for you to make your life better, shoot me a message on Instagram at @man_overseas. Mr. Paris is at the real Coach Powell LFG, because I don't want to share too much. This is a wide ranging discussion, and we just get after it and talk about a lot. So I hope you enjoy. Coach Powell, thank you for being here, man.
Thank you for having me.
We are in Playa del Carmen. It is probably as hot as it's ever been that I've been here, and I've been here a couple dozen times. I thought for sure, what are we in, April, would be cooler. It's not.
Yeah.
How do you deal with this, man?
You just have to hydrate. I know a lot of the locals don't really play around with the AC, or at least some people who I've had conversations with, but me and the air conditioning unit are best friends. When I get inside, it's like...
It's expensive, though, right? To have air conditioning?
I'm in Airbnbs. It's included. So,
I'm
in an Airbnb. Okay. I was happy to see that they didn't charge me based on the use. I'm trying not to be an asshole about it.
Yeah.
So, when I'm not home, I turn it off. More often than not, I actually keep the blinds closed. And then just challenge myself to spend time outside in exposure to sunlight. Try and get a spectrum of sunlight. So, I'll get out in the morning. I'll get out in the afternoon. And again, before the sun goes down.
So, a lot of Airbnbs, if you stay for a month or longer, will charge you a deposit and then take the electricity out of the deposit. So, you're saying you've stayed for an extensive period of time at Airbnbs?
This is like the fourth Airbnb that I've stayed at in the last 2.5 months.
Okay.
So, I've bounced around a bit.
Good for you.
I was staying a little too far from Centro, which is where all the action is, or my action, the gym, the track. All that walking, I dropped weight so fast.
It was
unbelievable.
What do you weigh, dude?
Right now, about 225 pounds.
Okay, so two of the last three guests that I've had, including Coach Powell, have been fucking monsters. These guys are the biggest guys in the gym. I'm not joking.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, it's true.
Yeah.
I don't know much about you, though. Where are you from?
Born and raised in Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
Oh, nice.
So in the cold north. Raised by a Caribbean family, like parents were born in Trinidad and Tobago. So cool. It was like raised as like a, you know, I got that, the Caribbean roots are very strong. Toronto was home, and then I just bounced around a lot for mainly education, for scholastic, for school.
What kind of schooling?
Well, just what everybody else would go through. Elementary schools in Toronto, secondary school Toronto, but then I went to Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, Illinois.
The Salukis.
Yeah, exactly. There you go, the Salukis. So I was a Saluki for a little period of time, and then I ended up transferring to a school in Canada, in Quebec, so where I ended up becoming proficient in French.
Wow.
So I was, living in Quebec, and after Quebec, I moved to Edmonton, Alberta, which is where track and field was like the big piece of my life. I moved there to become a professional athlete, and that saw me through to the Olympics and and then eventually into what I do today. So a power and performance consultant was what I used to call it, but so I don't confuse people, I tell them I'm a high performance coach. And if they're still confused, I'm a fitness coach who works on, I say, high performance habits.
You get to the Olympics. Tell me about that.
That story is like, it doesn't hurt me anymore. It hurt for a little period of time, I'd say about 2-3 years, but I didn't end up competing at the games. So I was qualified as a part of the men's 4x100 meter relay team. They take the top six from the 100 meter finals at your national champs. They take the top four, obviously the top four who will field. And then the next two are the alternates. So I ended up coming fourth at trials, qualifying me to be on the 4x1 relay. And while I was at the games, I ended up getting sick. One of the guys on the team, Tino, so he was sick. I didn't room with him, but I was right next door. His roommate didn't get sick, but it was me.
It wasn't nerves, was it?
I don't think so. Ultimately, I think the reason why you get sick is the immune system is compromised beyond what it's able to. It's compromised enough that the guard's down and whatever was hanging around, lingering, pathogens, they get in and they just start to wreak havoc. So there's something that I did to suppress my system. I don't think it was like the psychosomatic stress. Could have been nerves.
Was your dad ambitious? How do you end up in Toronto from Trinidad and Tobago?
That's a long story that I still don't completely know. Like, I just spent some time with my grandfather in Brooklyn, and he has a lot of that story. It was one of those things, like, I had my mother's mother ended up in Toronto. So it was, and her sisters all ended up in Toronto. It was like the grass is greener on the other side thing. And then the allure was like, my mom was like, okay, I have to go there too. My dad was actually really good friends with my uncle, my mother's brother, before they became my father and followed suit. I know Toronto's a hop skip away, but there's this very big Caribbean community in Toronto. Very, very big.
And do you have siblings?
Plenty, yeah.
How many?
I have 3 sisters and 1 brother, but I grew up with 1 sister.
Okay.
Grew up with 1 sister, and then my father had a few other kids, but we're all close now, which is awesome.
So you have an Instagram post, which, let me share your Instagram because you're definitely worth a follow.
Yeah, thank you.
At The Real Coach Pal, and that's Pal, P-O-W, at The Real Coach Pal. I'll pause so you guys can hit the follow button. You have this post and it's a voiceover. It sounds like you. I don't know if it's you or not, but it says, my mama said, be careful out there. I'm worried about you. And I said, mama, worry about them.
Yeah.
I freaking love that. Yeah. Is that your voice?
No, that one's not my voice.
It's not? Yeah. You found it?
When I found it, I was like, I should re-record this with my own voice.
Yes.
But I thought, you know what? I'm going to pay homage to whoever it is that the originator of this one, and I'm going to use it. So, but solid. I love that one because that was my mom. My mom was a big warrior, big time.
Mine too.
And that kind of rubbed off on me. And so I had a lot of work to do in that area, and I still have work to do in that area, you know.
Like so, anxiety?
I can't really call it that. It's weird. Like, you put me in a big room, bunch of people, I'm not sweating. You put me on the spot. I might sweat a little bit, but it's like I don't get anxious about the things that people with anxiety get anxious over. Mm-hmm. Not agoraphobic, whatever, that kind of stuff. But it's like second guessing. Some people say it's a sign of the Libra, like the balance. It's like you're always, you're looking at things from many different perspectives. So then you end up getting confused by where, like, which stance you should be. So it's like, you got to be polarized, but it's like, sometimes I'm like too impartial. And then I end up worrying about how I'm presenting myself. And then there's a bit of that old school me, which was like the people pleaser. If you're standing in the middle, it's like both sides are like, what the fuck?
That people pleasing stuff, you have to end that soon as you're mature enough to realize that that's going to get you nowhere.
Thank you. Thank you.
What is hamstring poppy?
Okay, that's the hashtag on my face. So hamstring poppy is an old nickname because I have abnormal sized hamstrings. I've had juiced up bodybuilders approach me and be like, I'm trying to get my hamstrings big. I don't know what the hell you did. And I always have to tell them, these things came from the track. I didn't do a leg curl, deadlift, none of that stuff. It was, we would sprint. And the biggest part was the upright sprinting. That's what stresses the hamstring the most.
Interesting.
And my running style was a bit unorthodox, and that's why my hamstrings look the way they do.
Do you know Andrew Huberman?
Yeah, okay. I know of him. Yeah, I
listen great to podcast.
Him. Yeah, yeah.
He was saying the other day that if he only had to do three exercises, one of them was sprinting.
Thank you. Yeah, I love that. Tom Bilyeu had I can't remember the name of his podcast.
It might be the Tom Bilyeu podcast. Yeah, I don't
it.
Know.
I think that's it, actually. He had Stan Efferding on there. Stan Efferding, like, renowned strongman, competed in bodybuilding, currently coaches John Jones, who's apparently a distant relative of mine. So, John Jones, the UFC fighter.
Yeah.
So, anyways, Stan Efferding was on the show, and he said same thing. He was like, he related it more to the young athlete and said, if there's something that you can do for the young athlete with their future self in mind, get them to sprint.
That's awesome.
The highest form of human expression, the levels of coordination that it takes. It's such a spectral thing to do, or misnomer, I'll say the transference is really high. And I found that in my career, like working with athletes, teach them how to sprint, no matter what the sport, they end up getting better. Sometimes it's a hard pill to shove down other people's throats who are very old school and stuck in their ways. I can talk about some issues with the people who, like, as soon as I start telling the story, the people will know that I'm talking about them. But let's say I worked with a particular organization for some time and these athletes don't run in their sport. But when I was coaching them to sprint, teaching them how to run and be very dynamic, whether it be acceleration phase starting off or running upright very fast, the athletes were more springy, therefore jumping higher. They just moved better. And when you have someone who moves better, you have a greater inventory of exercises you can give them. So you can make them smarter by teaching them how to run fast or sprint. But the coaches, we had a limited amount of time. So the coaches were like, well, we want you to train our athletes and make the training look like the sport we perform. So we want you to specialize when it comes to the strength conditioning. So I acquiesced and I capitulated, gave up and basically did what they were asking, the people pleaser. And over the course of a couple of years, the program went from I was creating really good athletes who were very excited about training to athletes who didn't really care to be there, who were always injured. Had a lot of injuries, so much so that about that job, I started to feel down. I don't want to use the word depressed or anything. I'll say I felt compressed. And I was sad because I felt like I wasn't giving them what I wanted. The payday was pretty good, but it came a point where I stopped caring about that. I was like, I don't care to get that kind of money if this is what I'm doing to the athletes, because I felt responsible. I'm doing this. I'm getting them hurt. I should stand up and say, hey, I'm not going to do it this way. This is not the Coach Powell way.
Yeah. The reason we have ass is to run. Isn't that true?
Yeah, yeah, So I was in a documentary with Dr. David Suzuki. He has that documentary called The Nature of Things. It's like a series. And this series I appeared in was called The Nature of Things, The Perfect Runner. I wasn't the perfect runner. One of my teammates was. But in it, they talk about the ass being that key to running, like the reason why we have an ass, why we're upright and we can locomote fast. Then Smithsonian Channel took that same documentary and, like, with permission from the directors, they changed it up a bit. I think the focus was, it had something to do with butt in the title. And then it's a picture of me. Yeah, I'm like, yes.
That is great. So you're an ass man.
Yeah, I am. I've
got to be.
Yeah, yeah. I'm an ass man. The thing is this, I'm a picky ass man because of the sport that I was in. Like, you're in track and field, you see some of the most fit bodies on the planet.
Yeah.
And a little more insight, my ex-girlfriend, first girlfriend ever, was a sprinter. She was a national champion in Canada.
Mm.
And, like, great physique.
Oh,
great
personality, sure, but great sat physique. Up like a donkey, like a giraffe.
Yeah, and I got accustomed to that. So then if I didn't see that, I was like, my interest isn't sparked.
Uh-huh.
So it's taken me a long time, like, to change my standard in what kind of physique that I can be aroused by, so to speak.
Oh, you know? Man.
But, the butts and track and field are crazy.
Yeah.
I'm trying to teach the rest of the world that, though, without trying, like, not trying to be a corny salesman. But it's like, I see so many, the most popular exercise amongst women at this point, I think, is the hip thrust. And
yes.
I think it's a good exercise.
That's where they lay on the ground and then throw their hips up with weight, like a barbell laying across their pelvis.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And it's a good exercise. Now, is it a great exercise? Maybe, depending on how you use it. But I'm seeing people really load up on that exercise.
Mm-hmm.
The range of motion, if you look at it, it's very, very short. Very short range of motion.
Yeah.
And cool. time under tension, like the amount of stress that the tissue was under in that exercise is very limited. So I say like a great way to use it is to expose yourself to a ton of volume. So if you're going to go heavy and you have time, get in 10 sets. 10 sets of four or five, the heaviest thing that you can lift or close to the heaviest thing you can lift, as long as you're not messing with your mechanics and you can feel the load in the glutes, or get under that bar and do two sets of 20 or three sets of 20 and just destroy the tissue, but get some volume in that sucker.
You realize how lucky you are to have this track right here?
Yeah.
Because where I live, it is so hard to find a place to sprint, and sprinting on a treadmill is not the same.
No, not at all. No.
But you agree with Huberman that sprinting would be a top three exercise if you had somebody that wanted to either shed weight or get rocked up or...
Yeah. Like there's the secondary byproduct from sprinting is like there's going to be some strength gains. That's the byproduct of sprinting. Crazy. In my group, six athletes in my high performance group of track and field when I was an athlete. So I was a member of this group, and I could tell you that remembering how heavy everybody could either bench or squat. I didn't squat back then because of my back or fear of back injury, but we were all crazy strong. I was 185 pounds, able to bench 355 as a sprinter.
I
had another teammate who had kind of like a, he'll hate me if he hears this, but a bit of a beer belly. Everyone bugged him about it, but he could bench 265 without a problem. And he was not a strong guy by any, he didn't look like a strong guy by any stretch. Another guy in the group, Tyler Christopher, just wired beyond, very, very skinny, but very wired. Could toss a medicine ball farther than you could see. Could throw up weight that would just surprise you in a squat, a step up, whatever. So the neuromuscular work or stimulus that you get from sprinting from such a high velocity activity does something crazy. There's a ton of science and all that stuff, but I'll just say from personal experience, just the moment I started adapting to high level sprinting was the moment or the time where I was able to start dunking. Like I couldn't dunk before. And I was like very anxious about that because kids in my neighborhood could all dunk. Some of them were my height. Mm-hmm. There was a few who were, the ones who were my height could dunk.
What are you, 5'10"?
5'9" and a half.
That's some ups, dude.
Yeah, I just like.
That's Spud Webb shit.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It took a while. It was like my second year of university. You're still nervous around that time. No one was around. Grabbed a basketball, ran up to the net, boom, dunked, and was like, holy. Like, what's changed? I'm the same height. I'm heavier. As a sprinter, you're doing plyometric training. We're bounding, boom, boom, tripling, low amplitude plyometrics, high amplitude. Achilles tendon is thickening. Calves getting a little bit bigger.
It's amazing. If I can brag about myself a little bit, really fast when I was young. And I could jump. So I remember I moved from Louisiana to Texas in eighth grade. And the basketball coach had a tryout. This was the tryout for me because he had heard about me. And he put me at the top of the key. He bounced me the ball from the free throw line and he said, take me to the hole. And I did like a little AI kind of thing where I acted like I was going right and I went left. And AI. I did a layup and I hit the back of my fingers on the backboard as an eighth grader. I probably haven't grown an inch since eighth grade.
Oh, wow.
But for a little white guy to be able to do that, that was something serious. But I've always been fast. I mean, like in college, if we ran sprints, I would come in first. If we ran distance, I would come in last. And my theory was always, well, I'd rather look like a sprinter than a distance runner.
Yeah.
So what you're saying just totally rings true about building muscle and everything. So if the average, let's call him a sales guy, the guy selling insurance who's 35 years old is listening to this right now.
Yeah.
And he hears you say, oh, sprinting needs to be one of my top priorities.
Yeah.
How do you start? Like, is he running hundreds? Is he running 50s, 40s, 60s?
I would start him off on a hill. The mechanics on a hill are what you want on the flat. Now, having someone run up the hill, I don't have to say much. Having someone just start off running fast on the flat, it's going to be a little bit harder. Also, uphill, it slows them down. So the velocity is going to be a little bit slower. The potential for injury is a lot less. So that's where I would have them start. Hill sprints with like maybe a 5-degree grade, maybe a little bit, I'd say around a 5-6-degree grade, and getting them to run 30, 40 meters.
So what kind of instrument do they go outside with to measure this hill?
You know, what you could do to make it simple is you could take 20 large paces up the hill. There are 25 large paces up the hill.
Okay.
You know, boom, boom, boom.
But you talked about degrees and that's...
Oh, excuse me. So for the degree, that you're going to have to eyeball that.
Okay.
It's one of those things, like, I'd say grab your protractor, take a look at what 5 degrees looks like.
Okay.
And then just you have to juxtapose, like compare yeah. that to the hill.
And then put the protractor back in your front pocket and get to sprinting. I'm big on running hills too. Yeah. My wife and I used to do it a lot more before we had the baby, but we lived in New Orleans for a little over a year, right by the levee near the Mississippi River. And that was like the perfect hill. Yeah. Tell me, is there any benefit? I mean, I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
But I don't know if this is my natural inclination, because when I was in college, when we would sprint, we'd run 110s and then we'd turn around and jog backwards. And he said that ensured strength of balance in our legs. Now, that was the only place I'd ever heard that. And it makes sense when you hear it. So when I run hills naturally, and maybe I've seen other people do this, I will walk backwards down the hill.
Yeah.
Any truth to what I'm saying? Is that worth doing?
There's one individual who's revered in the sprinting industry or track and field. I shouldn't say just sprinting, but in the sport of track and field, who is somewhat of a proponent to that, if I could say this, and that's Dan Pfaff. He was a coach at Texas. He's coached the University of Florida, coached Marion Jones.
Like strength and conditioning coach?
Sprint coach, and he's actually coached the throws. Mm. So he's had like world-class Olympic medalists in shot put all the way to the fastest woman in the world, Marion Jones, to Donovan Bailey, a Canadian Olympian who won it in Atlanta. But he uses backwards jogging, backwards activities to assess the body. Obviously, you can assess the body in forward mechanics, but he picks out asymmetries and faulty mechanical patterns, watching people move backwards. He does it in a very unique way. I'm still like, I was introduced to that coaching a long time ago, and then that just started coming back to me again, because he actually he posted it on social media. He's an older gentleman, perhaps a bit out of touch with the young generation, but when I saw one of his posts online and saw what it was, him talking about the backwards mechanics, I was like, interesting. I know it has a lot to do with, you could say, like pronation. Like if you're taking a look at what's happening at the at the hip, if someone is lacking relative motion in terms of an internal or external rotation of, let's say, the thigh that's supposed to happen based on where you are in your stance, if you're limited in that, he said he believes it's easier to pick it up when watching someone move backwards. So I say the table test is a good way, but the table test would be like therapist getting someone to lay on a bench and they're having them move through a particular range of motion, like asking them to raise their leg. The leg raise, boom. Oh, you should be getting to 90, but you're only at 30. That's a big problem.
Yeah.
You know, then you follow up with another test to see what's happening with the hip flexors and so on and so forth, or adductor inside thigh drop test. And that can start giving you more information. The problem with that is you're laying on the ground. Gravity's not acting on you in the same way. But then you stand them up and have them move. Now you may get a little bit more information. It's higher risk. So you're now going to deal with certain, I'll say, identity crisis. So you have someone lay down, there's no threat. That's how I usually start people who've had like some serious injuries. Mm. You come to me, something's going on. I know that you're going to be very nervous about raising your arm if you had a serious shoulder injury, even though the therapist has said you're ready to start strength training. Mm. So I'll lay you on the ground and have you do shoulder exercises. The threat is lessened. There's less inhibition. It's the moment I get you to stand up, now you have these posture muscles that are active, but you're also like, oh, I'm up.
Yeah.
Like, this is a little bit different. So you now have other things that you're going to have to deal with, like the emotional state, which influences range of motion.
We talked earlier about anxiety. One of the things, I don't know if it's true anxiety, but I get anxious about being too soon old and too late smart, about a vast range of areas in life. And so I'm always trying to study this, like GPT-3 has come out, right? And I'm like, oh shit, do I need to be on this? Yeah. Do I need to learn about GPT-4? You know, because I don't want to fall behind and I'm competitive that way. So I would do anything, speaking of too soon, old, too late, smart, I'd do anything to go back and have this conversation as a 15-year-old. Because like you, you've obviously got a frame upon which you've built a dude's jack. Like, I'll post pics to promote the episode. You'll see. Like, I would do anything to go back and learn the proper technique of running. Because if I told you, like, my 40 time as a 13-year-old, you'd be like,
what were you running?
I'm embarrassed to say. Like 4-4, 4-4-2, as a 13-year-old.
For your, what distance?
Yeah, 40-yard dash.
40-yard. That's like,
yeah. That's rolling. Stupid. I jumped 18 foot six as an eighth grader.
Okay, yeah, you definitely have the spring.
I have the run and the jump.
Yeah.
I do. I joked about you being a black guy yesterday because you work with all these professional hockey players.
Yeah.
But I was the one who was always told, like, I should have been the black guy.
Yeah.
You probably should have been the white guy. But it's crazy. And it was, I think, came from every time I walked around my grandparents' house or I passed a basketball goal, I would jump and touch the door frame. Yeah. Or if they had any kind of chandelier hanging, I'm jumping and touching it. Or I would run from the front door on the inside of my house to the back of the house, down the hall, juke my parents' room, go into my room, and then jump up over the pile into the end zone, which was my bed.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
That's play.
Yes.
That's play.
And that's all I did all the time. That's important. I just had so much energy. And I think that's where, and I rode my bike a lot.
Yeah.
And if you've seen my calves, I mean, most of it. That's pretty natural.
Yeah.
I would give anything to go back. I mean, I would pay a lot of money to go back and have these conversations at that age, which is why I think it's so important to have one-on-one personal coaching. Get someone who's specific to your circumstances. Because you and I had the conversation, Coach Powell, man, you might be giving away too much for free. But I'm railing against myself here too, because I do coaching and we obviously don't do the same type of coaching. So you can hire us both, but it would be for two different things. You said that that is something that you were concerned about at one time, right? Giving away too much for free.
Most definitely have had. I actually had a mentor back in the day. I can hear him in my head now, giving too much away for free. Yeah, I would coach, and after coaching, a lot of the parents who were kind of like enamored by my presence or whatever, that's how they would behave. They'd come and I'd chat with them for like an hour and a half, 20 minutes with this parent, 20 minutes with that parent. And I'm not just talking about how their kid's performing. I'm telling them what more they can do at home with food and this and communication with their kid. And one of the parents was like, I feel like slapping you. You know, he was very outspoken, bad mouth too, right? But I was like, there was some respect there. Like, he was a bit blunt and would step across the line in certain areas, talking about sex life and stuff. I'm like, I don't care to hear this. But the thing about him, the moment he talked about business, I had the craziest amount of respect for this, for this gentleman. And he would say, like, you're giving away too much for free. You are too available. And by making yourself too available, you are going to cheapen yourself. He's like, you want people to take you seriously? You have to, you need to create a little bit of scarcity. And when it comes to your presence, but that also means valuing your time. That's, I mean, instead of sitting here chatting with them for an hour and a half because you feel like you're doing something, you're giving it away for free. So they're going to know you as the free guy.
Well, you have the heart of a teacher and you enjoy serving others.
I do.
I'm the same way. That's why we do what we do.
Yeah.
That's what makes the other part of it so hard, the business side.
Yes.
I told you the other day, I had a guy who's probably referred me as many clients as anyone who told me, you know, I wasn't going to work with you if you charged me $1 more than an amount that I had in my head. And I said, what amount was that? He said, you sure you want me to tell you? I said, yeah. He goes, $1,500. I said, $1,500 a month? He said, yeah. I'm like, I need to raise my prices.
Yeah.
I've been coaching for 5 years. If you had hired me in that first year, you would have gotten me for a price that is about 20 to 25% of what you'd pay today.
Yeah.
He's changed my life because he's the reason I've raised my prices. And I don't know if it's coincidence or what, but as soon as I did, I got a higher caliber of client and I'm making way more money than I ever anticipated. I'm supposed to be retired, but what I do in coaching covers the bills by far. So anyway.
I like it. I like those stories.
Yeah.
I love it. Sometimes that's what it takes. It's like, it might take someone to just flash the light on you for a quick second for you to see what it is that you're holding.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're in the dark and you're clothed in something or draped in something, and that's your greatness, but you don't see it because you normalize carrying it, and then someone flashes the light and you look at yourself and you go, holy shit.
That is so true. You know, because you and I also had the conversation about when somebody buys 45 minutes from you, they're not buying that 45 minutes.
Thank you.
They're buying the last 20 years.
You. Yeah. I have a really good friend. He got into fitness coaching later than I did, about maybe 5-6 years later. in our relationship, he's very spiritual. So there's a lot that I learned from him on that side. And then when it comes to like the business coaching and like just the fitness industry, like I've shared a lot of info with him. I watch him with his greatness and I see some of the things that are going on. The information I'm sharing with him is always something that I can continue to use for myself in my business. An example, your value comes from your identity. If you don't see how valuable you are, then you have an issue. You're going to be surrounded by people who see you at whatever value presented. And then it's this vicious circle of like, you will always get stuck. You will always stay there. So it takes for you to like step aside, create scarcity, get to work on yourself to reevaluate, rediscover, and hopefully grow from that introspection to move forward.
Folks, I had planned to ask him about dating, but it seems like he's accelerated that conversation. But no, I want to talk more about fitness because you are so knowledgeable. How did you get into fitness in the beginning? I mean, was it through athletics?
It started off with athletics. I actually wanted to be a forensic scientist. And
like Michael Bodden?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. And it's like, I ended up at school in Quebec. They didn't have the program. And I, quote unquote, settled for the second line, which was physical education, teaching, kinesiology. At the time, I was kind of by myself when it came to training. I had a track and field coach who wasn't at the university. He was back home in Toronto. I was in Quebec. I didn't train with the club team, with the university team. I had my own program. My coach was a very busy guy, so sometimes I got the program, sometimes I didn't. But I never made an excuse. I'll figure out what I need to do. And how do I do that? I study. So I became a student of the game. I dealt with injuries. They were all very minor, luckily. But when I would get injured, I would try and find what I need to do. And I wouldn't just go to a textbook. I also relied on feeling. I'm creative. Like I have a little side hustle in the fashion industry as well. But that creative expression, I bring it everywhere. So in track and field or even in coaching now, I'm always trying to figure out how I can get things done in a very effective manner without wasting people's time. So to make a long story even longer, I got into it because I just loved it. I loved the troubleshooting game. I loved what it feels like, not just the desired outcome, achieving a desired outcome, but the journey and like what it does to you. It makes you smarter. So I had an injury. How you get out of that injury, you get smarter.
Well, it not only makes you smarter about the injury, it sharpens your mind.
Yeah, exactly.
When you're in good physical fitness.
Yeah.
It reduces anxiety. Yeah. I mean, there's so many benefits to working out.
Big time.
I can't understand not working out or making time for it.
Yeah.
I don't care if you have 11 kids. You know what I tell my family? Yeah. I'm going to the gym so that I can be a better husband and father.
Yeah. That's so true. Actually, a question that I recently asked on Instagram was, I related dating to fitness and asked followers the question, is fitness compatibility relevant in your dating world? You know, and 89% of the people said yes, that they prefer fitness compatibility. If not, it creates contention, it creates problems.
I wonder if that would be higher or lower than political affiliation.
Yeah.
I'll bet you it's about 89% nowadays.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Especially ever since COVID.
Yeah.
Like,
that's interesting.
Yeah, like friendship pools have changed dramatically. I've watched that happen. It's the same thing when you think fitness compatibility, political compatibility, or political belief compatibility, and then you have class.
You know, like social class?
Who won't date outside their class and things like that. So I feel like perhaps the percentage may not be quite the same, but there's so many different criteria that people will handle in order to determine who their partner is going to be or who they want.
It's hard to determine class nowadays, though, because you can have a Lambo on Instagram and then return it to the rental store the next day.
I've seen it. So I was in Miami for 10 months.
Oh, really?
So,
living there 10 months?
Yeah, yeah.
Why?
It was just vacation.
Nice. Craziest story from Miami.
Oh, my goodness. This is a sad story. Courtney, I can't remember her last name. She's an OnlyFans model, big on Instagram, 2 million followers. She kills her boyfriend. I was on the 52nd floor in the penthouse. She lived on the 22nd floor. We shared a private elevator. I come home from the gym. I see police cars everywhere. And I'm like, what's going on? This doesn't look normal. The with the amount of police officers that were, or vehicles that were around. Concierge comes up, very eccentric guy. We always chat with him, and he's like, hey, something happened here. It's not good. They may be pulling a body out of the building. I'm like, what? Immediately, my mind went to this couple because I'd seen them before. Just think
52 floors, and immediately your mind went to a certain couple.
Yeah. So
had you seen him hit her or something?
No, no. And that's the thing. I thought he was the one beating her, only to find out later that she was the one usually beating on him.
Wow.
Doesn't mean that he never hit her. You know, someone from the building across the way could see into their unit or closer to the unit and said he saw him raise his hand to her face. But anyways, yeah, found out that she plunged, or somehow a knife ended up, you know, just kind of like behind his clavicle, like straight down, and punctured his heart.
What, are you his attorney? Somehow a knife ends up in his clavicle.
I don't know. I haven't been following the case, so I don't know. The report was that she threw the knife.
Mm.
And then I have...
Off the building?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Exactly.
No, I'm asking.
So no, off the building.
Is that what happened?
No, she... Like, they were in the unit together. They were in their suite together.
Okay.
And the neighbors from the 23rd floor, I know them, they called the front desk, say, hey, another noise complaint, because this couple, they had quite a few issues. So they even picked up footage of her beating on him in the elevator. That they released that after to help his case. So 2301 calls, hey, noise disturbance, concierge goes up, and no one's answering the door, but there's blood everywhere. The blood's in the room where the private elevator opens up.
So he didn't die.
And...
Yeah, you said help his case.
Oh, yeah, right. Sorry. Right. Yes, he did die. He died. It's just like to help, to weigh against her.
Okay.
Proving that she murdered him, not in self-defense. So Flynn telling the story, right? So anyways, they go up to the unit and there's blood everywhere. So he calls security and then tells security, you need to call the cops. So security arrives and he said it took a while for security to arrive. I'm talking to the concierge, so banging on the door, and eventually security comes, and then he says he starts yelling police. You know, police, and that's when she opened the door. Place was just drenched in blood.
Jeez.
And yeah, he saw the knife in there, and he describes the story. There was quite a bit of details. When I got home, I didn't know about the elevator, and I'm used to taking the private elevator. So I go over to that one. Boom. I hit it. Elevator door opens up. Blood everywhere.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
How many of you have access to this elevator?
Basically from the exempt 8 and 9. 8 and 9. 8 is like the fitness center, massage, spa. 9 was like the workspace, piano room, all that kind of stuff. All the way up to 53. There's 53 floors.
Okay.
So everybody in a 01 unit. So basically 5301 all the way down to 201. Without 8 and 9 have access to this elevator. And I was surprised that they didn't shut it down.
Yeah.
I actually got in the elevator and I took a picture.
Yeah.
To send it
that's
to
a
my
crime
friend,
scene.
My family. There's blood everywhere. You could just walk in this elevator and leave prints.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then the craziest thing was a day later, I'm going home and they cleaned up the private elevator. I'm going up and this guy hops in the elevator with me, but he was already standing at the elevator and he's just standing there. You need a fob to get into the elevator. He doesn't have one. So elevator door opens up. I walk in. I fob my floor, 52. He goes to hit his floor, and it's not going. I'm like, you need a fob. So I have a universal fob. So then he hits it. And I'm thinking, 22, that's Courtney's floor and Christian. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, this guy's going onto that floor. I'm wondering, why is he going there? And he's dressed in all black. So I look at him and I go, you're going to 22? And he looks at me. He's like, yeah. Like he looks worried. Elevator doors open up and he walks in and he grabs he has his bucket there. So he was cleaning the unit. And the look he gave me was like he was in shock. So he
I opens, thought you were going to say he was the coroner or
no,
something.
No, no. So he was the cleaner. So he opens.
Cleaner.
Yeah. So he grabs his bucket before the doors close. The unit door was, the main door was already slightly open. He pushes it open even more. And I could just see the mess.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, there was someone else in there cleaning as well. And I was like, wow, that sucks.
That story was not premeditated, folks. I just asked him for a story from Miami.
Yeah.
What's the last name? So if I wanted to Google the story.
I can't remember his last name, but the guy's name is Christian. The girl's name is Courtney. Okay. But you can type in OnlyFans model murders boyfriend. It pops up.
How many OnlyFans models lived in that building, you think?
Oh, my goodness. Our building was actually pretty good, despite that story. There was quite a few in the buildings in that community. There's a number of them. There was that, the building I was in was One Paraíso. There was Grand Paraíso, Bayviews. And there you had a few more. You had some OnlyFans girls who were like very successful.
No, but
based on the things that you saw them wearing and the cars they drove. I shouldn't say successful. I'll say they seem to have accrued certain assets or maybe liabilities that give the impression that they're making a lot of money.
Oh, man. Miami. There's no way you could pay me to live there.
I met some really cool people. Like some of my top friends are in Miami. Really? I still chat with them every day. Like I met them while I was out there. Like two people, one in particular, I'll say three very real people. Like I'd say these are probably going to be best friends that I have a long time.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how do you get from a place like Miami where the cost of living is probably one of the highest in the world to a place like Playa del Carmen, a small beach town in Mexico?
Well, I was only allowed to be in the U.S. for an extended period of time. So once that time was getting ready to expire, I went back to Canada, and Canada was just too cold. Not only that, like I left the city where I had spent 13 years, Edmonton, Alberta, and was looking to get back to my roots in Toronto because I promised myself I would have more family time. But family was, we're happy that you're here, but go and live your life. So I was just a little upset with the cold weather and decided to just take off again. It was between Bali and Playa del Carmen.
You told me that, and I was going to ask about that, because if I had a chance, I could ask this a lot. If you could live somewhere for 6 months starting tomorrow, where would it be? Bali and Thailand are my top two choices.
Yeah, see, I have a friend who's leaving for Thailand in like 2 weeks. She asked if I would go with her. I could travel with women, but yeah, pick and choose wisely. I don't know her that well enough yet to travel with her. But Thailand was never on my radar because a lot of horror stories from illness to illness, whatever, drugs and
problems. I've been.
But I should never let somebody else's story deter me from experiencing something firsthand. And in the state that I'm in right now, or the phase of my life that I'm in right now, is I just want to travel. I don't want to feel like I'm held back by anything, you know, from that, from traveling, experiencing different cultures, learning, just getting to meet more people. I'm not like, I just want to make a ton of friends. I say I have very few friends, a ton of acquaintances, but find that in these interpersonal relationships or interactions, you learn so much. So
it's hard to make deep personal connections when you travel a lot. Yeah. A lot of it is surface level because it has to be. You're on to the next place.
Yeah, that's very true.
But you meet a lot of people doing what you're doing. How old are you?
40.
40. Okay, so I'm 42, and I've been doing this since I was 34. Of course, COVID put a snag in it.
Yeah.
And we lived in New Orleans during the COVID thing, which is funny. You said something earlier about you decided instead to do a second line. And I thought, I wonder if he knows what a second line is.
Yeah, I do. I know what a second line is.
Because if I have one and a half listeners, one knows what a second line is.
Oh, yeah. Yep, second line dancers,
So dating when you're moving about so much, that's got to be hard.
I don't even want to say it's hard. I don't know what's going on with me. It's not a priority.
Interesting.
You know, I exited a 6-year relationship the year before leaving for Miami. And in that relationship, we were actually talking about moving to Mexico.
Oh, wow.
And just things were just moving at turtle pace. Like we were each other's like kryptonite. It just wasn't working. Both of us weren't really living up to our potential, and the relationship became an excuse. So it's like we break up a year later. I was in Miami, and then now I'm in Mexico. Some part of it, I felt like it left like a bad taste in my mouth, like the experience. But it's like I moved to the point where I just realized, sounds cliche, but it's a blessing. Everything that you learn in every interaction in life, you may turn it 90 degrees and it's like, it looks terrible, but then you turn it again. It might even be just 45. Quarter turn that son of a bitch and realize, there's the blessing. So it took me some time because I used to think, oh man, fuck, ruined this one or did this. And it's like,
desire for a family someday?
I'm in the selfish phase. In this selfish phase, like I will not, I can't say never. Yeah. Where I am right now, I'm just so excited to see the rest of the world, to get better at what it is that I do, to just stay relevant. And when I say stay relevant, touching on what you said earlier about like just what AI is doing to change the world. It takes time to do your research and to do it well. And right now I'm surrendering to that. I just want to learn about this stuff, like companionship and stuff. I have good relationships, good conversations. So that takes care of like the intellectual side of thing. Yes, the sexual side, but it's not a priority for me. I've gone through the sex discipline thing, abstinent for 7 months. So a girl wants to throw it at me, I'm not going to get that excited.
Yeah.
Some people are like, oh man, it's like, no, I'm sure I have high levels of test. It's this. I understand. Like, I'm not going to, I'll hold you up on a pedestal based on your value. And the value isn't just what's between your legs. It's rarely just that. What are you going to add to my life? Because after sex, am I going to lay there and be like, okay, I need you to leave? Or, okay, let's have a deep conversation. Or there's something about you that I want to learn, or something about you that is inspiring me to be better, or a quality that you have that I want. When you don't have any of that, that's when you want her to leave. Or when vice versa, she wants you to leave, or he wants you to leave. Out here, like, I had a girl, it happens often enough for me to be like, what the fuck? But this OnlyFans thing, girls asking me to feature on their OnlyFans, their paid porn OnlyFans.
Oh, like, yeah, provide like, the, yeah, like have the sex equipment.
With them.
Wow.
Yeah, have sex with them on their OnlyFans because they're OnlyFans
stars.
I've had three requests.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And like them saying, oh, it'll be lucrative. I have a good following. You'll make some money. I got private clients who want to pay for to see interracial.
Wow. Like, that is so interesting.
Yeah.
Like, and that's
I
not
know
hard.
My value.
Yeah, that's so not hard to turn down.
Yeah. He said that's not hard to turn down.
I wouldn't think so. Yeah, because I'm like you. Like, I always valued myself and my mindset.
Yeah.
And I just feel like if you can overcome the urge,
yeah,
then there's almost nothing you can't do.
Thank you. Thank you. And that's the thing. I went through that. My experience with the 7 months abstinence was like, I didn't know how I'd be able to do it. But when I started it, I was like, I'm sure it's going to last a week. But luckily enough, stars aligned. I had a friend's friend randomly send me an email, or not even an email, DM or private message on Facebook Messenger at the time. And it was this like 14-minute speech from this individual talking about the sex industry and so on and so forth. And after listening to it, I like, there's part of me that was like embarrassed, but then another part of me was like, I think I know what I have to do. As corny as it sounds. And it's like, I used to make a ton of decisions based on sex, you know, pick a partner based on sex. And it's like, the sex was, it wasn't exciting anymore. Then you're like, okay, I don't want to be with this person.
Right.
It's a weird, I understand that that happens, but I don't know if that's a healthy way to be in relationships.
Yeah.
If like you feel the only thing they have to offer you is sex. It's like that shows that was the only thing, if I would mirror that, that's the only thing that I was offering.
Well, that's maturity too. I mean, you're 40 now.
Yeah.
So you would never pick a long-term partner based on sex.
No,
I mean, you're just so far beyond that,
yeah.
I would think.
So
same with me.
Yeah.
I didn't get married until I was 37, almost 38.
So there's hope.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the beautiful thing is it flip flops, right? Women have all the power when they're 22, 23, 24. And then they get to be 33, 34. They're competing with the 22, 23s.
Yeah.
And you have all the power as a 35-year-old. But that continues, man, as you get to be 45 and 48 and 52. And you go to certain parts of this world, they don't care how old you are, man.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Oh, I can tell here already.
Yeah.
I have a discussion with them and I'm like, I'm 40 years old.
Yes.
It's like I actually see this like shit-eating grin appear on their face.
Yeah.
Like, usually they say they can't believe that I'm 40.
Yeah.
But then the next thing is, lick their chops in there.
Yeah. I got a haircut here the other day. I've been going to the same guy. Like, I've been here 24 times.
Nice.
And one of the reasons we come here is for dental work, because it's about 10% of the cost.
Yeah.
So my wife and I had a few things done dentally, and I'll get my hair cut while I'm here. It had been a while. And the guy I always tip him well. He has 8 kids and he cuts hair.
Yeah.
How do you live, wow, right? Yeah. So I tip him like an American would. And he shaved my beard this time. And I've got some grays coming out of my chinny chin chin. And, yeah. And he said to me, 8 años más joven. That means eight years younger. Yeah. He thought I looked. And I was like, 30, nice. 35, I'll, you know, 34, 35, I'll take that. Man. Yeah. So he knows how to get a tip. But you're right, man. A 22-year-old little chica that you meet at the gym would have no problem with dating a 40-year-old. In the U.S., that does not happen.
Yeah.
In fact, I met my wife at the gym. She was 22 and I was 35.
Yeah.
If she were not Hispanic, I don't think it would have worked out. In fact, I know it wouldn't have.
Yeah.
There were no 22-year-olds at her maturity level that I had ever met.
Yeah.
And it was just because of the way she was brought up. And I just very much appreciated that. And we could have the conversations like you're talking about. And we had the other chemistries going. So my best friend in the world gave up pornography like 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember him giving a talk to a baseball organization and telling those guys that he had done that. And I know that had impact on them.
Yeah.
And since then, I have started to talk about it more.
Yeah.
It's like, go to the gym.
Yeah.
Go to the track.
Yeah.
Whatever you have to do, you do not want to be allocating your time the same way that some backward kid in West Virginia that's 15 years old with a dip in his mouth. You don't want to spend your time the same way he's spending his time 45 minutes a day.
Yeah.
Add 45 minutes up times 365. And that's a lot of minutes.
You have a skill that you could have learned that could help change the world.
Yes. So when you're 40, you're sitting with 5 kids with a construction working job that you don't want to be doing because you wasted so much time with pornography. But you and I know, being about the same age, I mean, what would it have been like to be able to access all that stuff at 12 years old?
Yeah, that's a big problem.
We'd be different people, don't you think?
Big time. It's just not just the access, but it's like the volume and the
endless novelty.
Like, it's like, it's like, there's always something new.
Whatever you want to see, too. Yeah,
that's definitely changing. And it's a conversation that I tend to have a lot. It's like the influence that social media is having on the fitness industry.
Okay, talk to me about that.
I kind of see that. Like, I know it kind of pulls its way from like the whole pornography thing, but it's like beforehand you had the big giants in the fitness industry who you'd pay attention to. And I'll just throw names out there that most people would remember, but it's like you had your Arnold Schwarzenegger,
Dorian Yates,
but then you in the same industry, but different category, you'd have like Richard Simmons. You know, and he would have his at-home workouts and stuff like that. Now you have thousands upon thousands, perhaps more than that, maybe millions of fitness influencers who are teaching something. And a handful of them are unqualified. They're selling sex appeal. They're selling cringe culture in the name of fitness. And because of the soapbox that they're standing on is such a big one. Right? Like, let's say a social media influencer are unqualified with 1 million followers and they tell people do X, Y, and Z. Most people are going to just jump on the X, Y, and Z when they don't understand the bias of that individual who they're following.
And the credential the credential is the 1 million followers.
Yeah. What I see is my teachers, my mentors in the fitness industry, and I'd say it's more than that. I have mentors in what I call the movement industry. Without movement, there is no fitness. So these teachers like Alex Effer, I'll plug these people, Connor Harris, David Gray, Pat Davidson, Dr. Pat Davidson, Kyle Dobbs. These individuals either purchased some of their content or have been a part of their mentorship programs or apprenticeship programs. Jonas Dodu, they're very good at fixing things and getting people stronger, faster. Excuse me, I'm also missing Stop Chasing Pain. Perry Nicholson. They're really good at what they do, but they don't have huge followings. It's almost like some part of it, I don't know if they care so much. They just love their job. They're masters of their craft. I'm watching them compete with the girl with the leggings wedged up her butt or the guy in the perfect gym outfit that looks fly, But because he looks good in his gym outfit, has, you know, a ton of followers, his hair is gelled right and this, and he's showing off some pec, and he gets the followers. It's not his or her fault or their fault. People choose who they feel like they resonate with the most.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, this day, it's not. I don't really see that it's about results.
How do you overcome that? It's almost like you have to create a word of mouth business.
That's what I did in Edmonton, Alberta. That's where it was for me. Social media was like, I played with it. Nowadays, I'm thinking a little bit, I'm a little bit sharper on that end. I'm like, hey, if social media is there, use it as it's a business tool.
Playing with it. How many Instagram followers do you have? Seriously.
168,000 Instagram followers.
I'm just playing with it.
But when I say playing with it, it's like I would just post some of my strongman feats. Like there was a point where that's all I was doing was that I would do a one-arm pull-up with 45 pounds in the other hand and I'd post it. I'd do a 700-pound deadlift, I'd post it. Pull-ups with my girlfriend on my back, post it. Backflip, post it. And then I got into, hey, I want to describe how I perform these exercises. I started pasting voiceover edits on these videos and telling people like three rich cues that I use to perform the exercise efficiently. And then it trickled into other things, then into now a lot of collaborations. I had little to no collaborations posted before. Then I got into some funny stuff. That's where my heart is. I like funny and fitness and put them together.
You should do more of that. Yes. If I can encourage you to do one thing, it would be keep doing funny with fitness.
I love it. Okay, so my ritual in the AM, I call it the AM the sunrise, is obviously you step out of bed. I do my little visualization thing, like what it is that I want to accomplish, or I even think about what I'm rising to. So it's like, wow, I've grown so much. And, you know, I remember when this was my life. And then I find something funny. The next step, sometimes it's before food, I find something funny to watch or funny to visualize, a memory. And I will laugh by myself. My neighbors are probably like, this guy's crazy. But I'll laugh. And sometimes I will laugh so hard that I have to call someone who will understand the joke. It's usually my sister.
Yeah.
And it'll be awesome. Like, oh my gosh, do you remember this? It's like, yeah. Then you laugh, boom.
That's a great way to start the day, dude. Yeah. If it's not gratitude, it's laughing. Yeah. That's the best way to start the day.
Yeah, big time. Previously, my routine was I would get up and watch Rob Dyrdek's Ridiculousness. It's a TV show, but I started thinking more about it. I'm like, that's actually kind of twisted because in the show, a lot of people were getting hurt. You know, like the hitting the nuts with a ball or something like that. That stuff still makes me laugh, but I'm trying to grow up. When you think about America's Funniest Home Video, Bob Saget, it was all like people getting injured for the most part. Like it wasn't serious injuries, but we're laughing at you. We're trained to laugh at people getting hurt.
You know the Galleria Mall in Houston? It's a pretty popular place. My favorite thing to do there is to go on the bottom floor and watch the skaters. And that is the funniest thing to me, watching somebody fall. And it almost doesn't even matter how old they are. Like, I see a 4-year-old girl fall, and I'm just like, oh, you know, like, I'm not even in a position to ask if they're okay, so I feel bad, but it's just, oh, dude, people falling cracks me up.
I have two stories about falling. One, my sister and I as kids used to watch the Winter Olympics. We'd watch ice dance. Just for the fall.
If
no one fell, we were bored. We're like, okay.
One thing I want to go back to, you've talked about multidisciplinary approaches to fitness versus fitness specialization pros and cons.
Yeah.
Those are some big words, and I'm a pretty good reader.
Yeah.
But could you explain what the hell you're talking about there?
Multidisciplinary approach. Some people think like fitness just exists in the gym, but fitness exists outside as well. I'm using fitness as a... I'm sure I could use a better term, but just to get
health, overall health.
Thank you. Exactly. So world health, multidisciplinary approach would be being on top of your food nutrition. You spend an hour in the gym training. That's good. But you also need to spend those minutes you take to prepare your food or to choose your food, prepare your food and eat your food wisely with the same amount of attention you spend to selecting your exercises accordingly and executing them properly. And then not only that,
sorry to interject, but from what I understand, the former is even more important because what you put into your body is more important, right?
Ultimately, if you wanted to just live a long life, you didn't have access to training equipment or things that would allow you to add resistance to, let's say, and perform movements with resistance, nutrition would be the thing, the only thing you have to fall back on. Some people can, and I won't say out-train a bad diet, but there are people who have a diet that is like 50-50 or 60-40, 60% healthy food, 40% junk, and will perform optimally. I've seen it, you know, track and field. I don't know in terms of longevity how that goes, but I've seen some of the top athletes in track and field and a few other sports who ate like garbage.
I'm sure you're familiar with Peter Attia.
No.
So he has the number one book right now on the New York Times nonfiction list. The book is called Outlive, The Science and Art of Longevity by Peter Attia, MD. And Peter Attia is one of those guys that goes on Rogan and he goes on Lex Friedman's podcast. And just a real smart dude and will give you a lot of Huberman-type tips on longevity. Anyway, I just happened to see that somebody, I think it was Greenberg, one of the sports guys.
Greenberg or Ben Greenfield?
No, not Ben. I know who you're talking. Yeah. No, it was Mike Greenberg 2 days ago posted on Twitter that he still reads the newspaper and drinks a cup of coffee, an actual newspaper, which I am a huge fan of. I still subscribe to regular newspapers. And his tweet says, also, yes, I still get the newspaper delivered. Those who don't will never know the simple pleasure of a cup of coffee and the morning paper. If that makes me sound old, fine. In this case, I'm positive it's everybody else who's missing out. And I kind of feel the same way. I love the newspaper. One of my problems with newspapers is that I get behind and they start piling up. So when I was in New Orleans, I subscribed to the Times-Picayune, which is the local paper, and the Wall Street Journal. You get two papers every day. You're not reading them all. They're starting to pile up under the bed and on the side of the bed. And my wife's like, you know, you got to read these or something. But what's amazing is I'll open up the Wall Street Journal, let's say go to the editorial page and find three articles that are like, I got to read these.
Yeah.
And so I'll put them aside. I've got a box full of newspaper articles that I haven't read yet that are now 2 years old. Oh, and it just gets ridiculous sometimes. But sometimes I save some really cool stuff like... Yeah. The Astros won the World Series in 2017. Well, that's a newspaper I want to keep.
Yeah.
Or the day after 9/11. I still have that newspaper. Anyway, all of that to say that he is holding up the newspaper and you can see the back of it and it shows the nonfiction list and Outlive is number one. And I was surprised to see it there because I hadn't heard of the book until my client told me this past week that he was reading it. They're all about longevity.
Peter Attia. Yeah, there's like another gentleman in the fitness industry who's, I guess, getting a lot of notoriety, Nadi Aguilar. He has his business is called Functional Patterns. He actually ripped into Andrew Huberman the other day. I don't know if it's like a tactic for him to gain, like to become infamous, you know, by attacking some leaders. Like he's even attacked Joe Rogan for his stance when it comes to the use of psychedelics and PEDs. Nadi Aguilar is like anti-PED, doesn't believe the general fitness patterns are helping humans. He believes that they're tearing them down, like bilateral squats, like dual leg squats, heavy to deadlifts. He thinks those are all destroying the human physiology and anatomy. There's some benefits, but if anything, it's not the way to go.
Let me interject there, because there is a post on your Instagram that shows people how to perfect the technique of a Romanian deadlift.
Yeah.
And deadlifts have become increasingly popular these last few years. Why is that, do you think?
The load.
The compound load. Movement of it?
Yeah, the compound movement of it, the area that it taxes, like it taxes the hip extensor muscles, hamstrings, glutes. It has a global effect on the body because like your lats are, your back muscles are engaged, your postural muscles are squeezing hard in order to avoid any unnecessary movement. And keeping good bar path so you can load the right tissue. So if there are a few general fitness exercises that one could perform, a hinge, a deadlift is considered a hinge, and it would be one of them. Nadi Aguilar and his fitness, functional fitness patterns, he's more about like swinging, having the opposites of the body like moving together. Mm-hmm. And I like that. Like that's running, that's throwing, that's striking.
It's symmetry too. I mean, that's
so,
what you
want.
To prevent injuries.
And I like his approach. I don't think that, but I'm more of a fan of the multidisciplinary approach. To come back to the question, it's like I actually have that stuff in my program, the running, the throwing. Like I go downstairs at Evolve and I hit the bag. I'm not like super proficient. I have a light background in martial arts, but I'll throw kicks, punches, jump knees, elbows, spinning elbows, like just moving around, playing, get on the ground, do handstands, cartwheels. And then I'm upstairs deadlifting someone's house, overhead pressing, you know, three girls, like that kind of stuff.
I've seen that too. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm demonstrating these things in all these areas. And I think that that's the approach that I have long wanted to package. It's very intimidating because not everybody is like, oh, okay, well, you sprint. Okay, I've never done that, but I'm willing to do it. Oh, now you want me to do calisthenics as well? Oh, I don't know about that. Then you want me to lift heavy? Oh, my gosh. Like, how many things is this? I want to specialize. Okay, well, you specialize. I could tell you, you're probably going to... I specialize in sprinting. I tear a hamstring. Hamstring injuries are common in amongst that sprinting population. It's an injury that's woven into the fabric of that sport. Hockey, high ankle sprains. Soccer, groin. You could point to a sport and be like, diving, shoulders, wrists, because when they rip entry. So you specialize, you're going to see some issues, hyper-specialization. But you have a multidisciplinary approach. You may not be the master of one, but I tell you, you're probably going to be better off. Yeah.
This is crazy. Mike Greenberg actually has the number 6 book on the nonfiction list, and I didn't even know he was an author. It says the ESPN host partners with his producer to create their list of top 100 sports legends. So that's why he did that, I'm sure, to show that he was on the list. And I didn't even notice that. I don't know if you remember, he did a segment with Mike Golic. Yeah. Remember Greenberg and Golic? Yeah. So that's who I'm talking about.
But yeah, the multidisciplinary approach is self-care, self-management. So having some type of therapeutic input or some things in place that will help you grow in terms of your stress coping abilities or mental resiliency. Yes. You never want to do that work late. You rather do it
and let it become habit and let those habits compound.
Exactly. Having a focus on conditioning, having a focus on movement quality, having conditioning. You get out there, you're doing your runs or you're doing your battle rope work and you're preparing yourself for a fight, so to speak. But then fighting is just, you're just going, you're just moving. There's not too much thought. You're an animal. When it comes to movement quality, you're slowing things down and being more present, feeling what's happening. I feel this muscle here and that going on. So being present, this is where you're learning. You're not just demonstrating battle ropes, whatever, sled run or sprint. You're grounded.
Do you have any thoughts on the fact that so many people can fight nowadays because cage fighting is so popular? Like, you really don't know who you can fuck with nowadays.
I've had
discussions
with people about that all the time. I'm like, you end up, let's say, I brought this scenario to a friend. I'm like, what happens when something happens and all of a sudden you square up with this guy, or even my girlfriends, I've said this, you square up with this girl and she puts her hands up and she's protecting her chin and she's moving like left to right and she's angling, like, you're in trouble.
Well, my thing is, like, growing up, if you were the athletic one, if you were built like yourself or like I was when I was 12, which was more comparable to you relative to others now, people wouldn't F with you just because of the way you looked. Yeah. Or if you did have to get in a fight, you could make it quick, you know, with a couple of lefts or just a jab and a knockout or whatever. A hook. There you go. Nowadays, like, if they get you on the ground and you don't know how to fight on the ground, you're screwed, regardless
break
of
something.
Yeah.
They'll break something. Luckily, I experienced that.
Really?
I've competed.
Oh, okay.
In no-gi grappling. Loved it. If I could do it all over again, I would still train the sprints, but I would compete in either freestyle Greco-Roman wrestling or just go straight to jiu-jitsu. I wasn't a fan of the gi, though. So I had a gi for maybe 2 days, and then I returned it. That no gi submission grappling was like my thing.
Yeah.
Loved it passionately. Got a little bit of cauliflower here on this side. I can't compress this one. That's how far it goes. This one, I took care of it, but broke my nose twice. And
Jesus.
Yeah,
you were serious about it.
It was good.
I loved it. As a man, you want to be able to provide and protect your family. And I always thought, well, I want to be rich enough where I live at least in a gated community to where I don't have to worry that much about the house being broken into or whatever.
Yeah.
So a gun is good.
Yeah.
But what happens? I remember asking this question in the CHL class. I was like, if I went to Bourbon Street, because I'm not that far from Bourbon Street where I live, and it was a very popular place to go in college, and we'd go party there, and even my one of my good friends, last buddies to get married recently, had his bachelor party there. Mm-hmm. You can't bring a gun in any of those bars.
No.
So what good is having a CHL if you can't bring a gun in the only place you'll need it, probably, in the next year? It's on those side roads walking back to your car that you're going to need the gun, but you would have left the gun in the car. So that always kind of bothered me about that whole idea of having a CHL. But then also I think, well, I can reasonably protect myself or my family, you know, if a guy attacked me or whatever. But if he gets me on the ground, I'm not trained for that.
Yeah.
You'd never know who's trained for that now because so many people are, yes.
It's a thing, though. In street fight, I have a friend, Randy King. I'm giving him a plug, KPC Self-Defense. Very intelligent guy. He offers reality-based self-defense training. By reality-based, you know, there was the old self-defense trainer who was like, hit to the throat, hit to the crotch, spin, bite them. Like, and it wasn't real. So that's why he called it reality-based self-defense. He's talked about that. A lot of times, like, if the fight's on the ground, you don't want to be on the ground. I think jiu-jitsu practitioners know that, too. They'd rather not be on the ground because it's like you never know who else is around. You could be fighting one person and someone sympathizes for them and decides to step on your head while you're going for a rear naked choke on the ground. Or the perception is you're going to kill the person who's got you in a rear naked choke and someone just decides to kick you in the face because they think you're killing them. The jiu-jitsu guys that I know, I don't think they're quick to, if ever they get in a street fight, want to go to the ground.
Yeah.
Not a good place to. I've seen some fights end there, but it's like.
Have you seen anything crazy go down here?
I've just heard gunshots.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the following day, I just heard that it was true. There was gunshots.
There was a guy and his wife that were walking from the beach, like two blocks from the beach, right on the corner where we're staying. And the cops had the guy, Mexican guy, around the neck. There was another truck, like a police truck, that was coming up the wrong way. There was a median. And then he crossed over jumped the median and slammed on the brakes because there was nobody coming, obviously, the other way. There were two cops helping these other two cops. And this guy, it was like he was on PCP, which is the drug that you don't feel anything. But I think he was just drunk. And he was so mad and he was ripped. And you could tell it was going to take more than two guys to get him corralled and handcuffed, and they threw him in the back of the truck that had shown up. And as we watched them, we got a lot of insight because it was two couples that were at the beach, and the guy that was friends with the guy that was being arrested, he had a little baby with him, and he was telling us what happened. The guy and the girl, I guess it's his wife or his significant other, they had gotten a fight to where she had hit him and he hit her back. And then the guy that's talking to us, the friend, said that his wife called the police. So they're probably not friends anymore. Once they got his hands and his feet cuffed, they were kicking the shit out of him in the back of the truck. And as they drove off, the guy tells us, he says, they're going to take him to a place, an isolated place where nobody can see, beat the shit out of him even more, and then they're going to take him in. And I was like, wow. And this was at like 10:45 in the morning.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, yeah. Crazy.
Was he like swinging on the officers or anything like that? Or
no, he was just like really struggling. He was trying to get out of the handcuffs. And he was on his back and throwing his legs up.
Yeah.
So I guess because they were trying to cuff his legs.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, God, we've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah.
It was right on, so we're staying at 5th and 38th. So it was on probably close to 5th and 42nd, like maybe two blocks over. There's an entrance to the beach right there, and it was two blocks up. Crazy.
5th and 38th. Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's so like I'm like two blocks right now, and then a half block over. You are? Okay.
Yeah, because I'm on 40.
Okay.
20.
Okay.
So, yeah, the other day I went to the beach and just, like, walked over to 38, walked straight down, and then I was at the beach. So
this is a great location. So, we're used to going to Mega. We used to stay at, like, Ana Suites a lot, that area.
Yeah.
But this is way better.
Yeah, I was actually past the highway.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, before I was past the highway, like, three blocks.
I've never been on the other side of the highway.
And I walked.
I won't go.
Here every day.
Wow. Yeah. See, to me, that's the other side of the tracks.
Yeah, it was the other side of the tracks. It's all like locals for the most part. Where I stayed, it was a new development. Mm. Guys from, he's Mexican descent, but actually born in Mexico, but raised in Minnesota. And like spoke perfect English, and he's a big fight fan. So we watched the fights together.
Oh,
and
cool.
Stuff like that. But he owned this complex that had, I think, 8 units, 8 suites.
And I'll bet that was modern, like, you know, $500 a month.
No, actually, yeah, it was more expensive than
really
that. So it was $1,000 for a bachelor, $1,500 for a one bedroom.
No shit.
But really nice. Like, when I tell you, like,
I'll bet.
Yeah, yeah.
Could, like, you see the water from the roof?
No.
No?
No, that's how far you're here. It's on the other side of the highway, 4 blocks.
So how many blocks 60. Is it to the highway?
The highway is like 55th Avenue, 50th Avenue.
So for listeners, the beach in Playa del Carmen, there's a one. And then it starts 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, all the way to, you're saying, 55?
Yeah, I was at 55, but it continues.
Oh, like, really?
There's another Evolve Fitness gym.
Okay.
That's on that side, and it's on 90th.
Oh, wow.
90th Avenue. So I would go to that one from time to time.
Okay.
But it was kind of like equal distance, like walking down this way or walking up west.
Interesting.
But I would be drained. I'd sweat. Like, I'd probably lose 3-4 pounds of water and then be at the gym, rehydrate, workout.
Yeah. When you're outside here between 10 and 4, you look for shade to walk in.
Yeah.
Because it's concrete everywhere.
Yeah. It hurts.
Yeah.
It hurts.
But 55, you're saying, is the main highway?
Yeah. I actually think it's 50.
50. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. 50 is the main highway.
So that's 10 blocks from the water, roughly.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's average blocks. It's not like giant New York City blocks.
No.
Yeah. Just trying to give listeners a feel. So we're an hour south of Cancun. And if you went an hour further south, you'd go to Tulum, which I haven't been in a while, but from what I understand has really come up as far as development.
I say that's a place where you want to, I mean, especially last year where you wanted to have invested. You know, we'll see what happens out there. Like, I think it'll just continue to grow. But if, I don't know what's happening with the U.S. economy and like the dollar and its buying power and stuff. But if Americans stop coming here less Americans are interested in coming down to Mexico to vacation, then that's injecting less money into the economy here.
Which that's happening.
I would assume would influence the real estate market over here. Like,
sure.
Right now, things are getting expensive here.
Really?
Yeah. I've been telling friends like, oh, yeah, this place, you know, we're renting this place for $1,500 or $1,600 a month. And they're like, what? I was getting that for $850 or $1,000.
Yeah, that's really true.
Yeah, and even people I know who are local are like, yeah, you got to get in now.
I started coming in 2015, and things have nearly doubled, it feels like.
Yeah, there you go.
And it used to be, as you moved away from 5th, everything got cheaper. Now you got to get to basically like 30th before things get cheaper.
Oh, yeah. I mean, where I was staying was a lot nicer when you get inside. It felt like it was an apartment in Toronto, like
really?
A high rise in Toronto. Like,
wow.
You did a good job of like outfitting the place, but it wasn't. I'm paying the same price downtown, like Centro, or where we are here, and it's a lot bigger. So,
but it's older.
Yeah, it's older.
Do you have a rooftop pool where you are?
There, I didn't have a rooftop pool.
And you're in a studio or a one bedroom?
One bedroom.
Yeah.
I was in studio at the other place, like nothing else was available at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the one bedroom became available, it was just like, I was kind of tired of walking all that way. You know, had I brought a scooter with me or bought a scooter or bike, then I probably would have stayed. But I have an electric scooter that I had in Miami and I shipped it to Toronto. So I had like one of those Bugatti scooters.
Oh yeah.
That's waiting for me. Yeah.
I love renting scooters. I've done it in Dubrovnik and Phuket, like Thailand. I've done it in Bali, of course. Yeah. It's not dangerous like I thought it would be.
Hold on, Croatia? You say?
Dubrovnik, Croatia. Yeah. I've rented a scooter. My friend that I went with there actually wrecked his scooter.
Oh.
Yeah, he did a too sharp a turn and hurt his ribs and had to go to the hospital. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so they can be dangerous, but as long as, I mean, I was taking it so easy because it was my first time, actually. But ever since then, renting a scooter in Thailand is like a necessity.
Yeah.
Or Vietnam or one of those places.
Yeah.
And everybody does it.
Yeah. We had a little scooter gang in Miami. A bunch of us bought those Bugatti scooters.
Yeah.
And we were just having a good time. Some of the best nights, like, just grab the scooter. We're in Edgewater, and we would just scoot over into Wynwood, which is like Quinta. It's like Fifth, like where all the clubs are stuff. And Wynwood, it used to be people who are strung out would go and hang out and do drugs. Now it's like popping as like the spot where everybody, you want to go shopping, get some good stuff, or you want to go to a club, or you want to get some good food. It's all in the same area. So the foot traffic there is unbelievable. It's like there's a parade every day kind of thing. That's what it feels like. So we would just grab our scooters and scoot through there, and you just see people, you know, talk to people, whatever. It's just even people watch.
And this is what, 2022?
Yeah. Okay. This is 2022 in Wynwood, Miami.
Because I feel like a lot of Silicon Valley types either move to Miami or Austin. Yeah. A lot of Brooklynites maybe move to Miami.
In the neighborhood where I was, the Paraiso neighborhood, very many, many people from New York. You can hear tell by their accent and the way they behave.
And the way they behave.
Yeah. New Yorkers, I always find they're just very blunt. I like that about them. They're just straight to the point.
It's funny you say that, because being a former salesman, like, I've had Manhattan as my territory and been warned, like, if you're not an asshole to them right away, they won't respect you. You've got to be witty. In Texas, we're not like that. Like, we're very understanding. A lot of us speak with a drawl. When are you going to wash your car? Well, I don't know if I'm going to wash my car or not. And then if you ever talk like that in Manhattan, it's like, dude, get the fuck out of here. You know, you got to be fast. You got to be quick, witty, and they'll like you. In fact, the last time I was here, I met a guy from Brooklyn. He was like a 75-year-old guy that has a house somewhere here.
Yeah.
And I invited him on the podcast, and we just were never able to coordinate our schedules. But there was a guy on a Netflix docuseries, the Pepsi one. Have you ever seen that, where the guy tried to win the Harrier jet? You ever see that series?
No.
Oh, well, this guy reminded me of the guy on that. Anyway, did you ever think you'd be living this life when you were 25?
I'll roll it back a little further. I thought I was going to be a professional wrestler, like WWE, or at the time WWF wrestler. For those who know me well, they're most likely chuckling, listening to this right now. Because, for the longest time, I wanted to be a wrestler. Didn't feel like I knew how to do that. I did. But there wasn't really that support system to go in that direction. No one knew salaries of wrestlers back then. So it was like, you're probably going to be broke, not going to make any money. Not like I chose a sport where it's any different, track and field. Yeah, I remember when I was young, I thought I was going to be a pro wrestler. Eventually, that turned into, hey, I'm going to be this forensic scientist wearing glasses and investigating crime scenes and stuff like that. And then eventually it was when I got into coaching in 2010, I got into coaching hockey players. You know, I remember thinking to myself, okay, I'm going to be that guy with the whistle and the clipboard and that's what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life. Now I'm in this position where it's like I have gathered the attention of many people through just being myself not just as an athlete, but as a fitness coach, and people like what I have to offer. There's this time freedom that I have now. But at the same time, I have this desire to do way more. Like, I don't feel like I'm not doing enough. I am now making myself more accessible to the general population, not just the athletes. So that transition is challenging in a good way. Like, I'm excited about it, and it makes me, quote unquote, anxious. It's not the anxiety, it's just anxious to get to those people and find out how I can really help them, what they need. Because for some reason, people think it's different from what the athlete needs. You need movement. You need a lifestyle that aligns you with your goals, the desired outcome that you want. You need to visualize. I don't care about motivation. I had a conversation with a client this morning, general population client who I'm doing private coaching with. And the conclusion of the conversation was, let's get rid of motivation, because he's been using it as an excuse. I'm not motivated today. And I said, check this out. I'm going to challenge you to get rid of that word. The word doesn't exist. It's not in your lexicon anymore. We're going to forget that, and we're going to use the word discipline, because motivation seems to be an excuse, or unmotivated. It's like, no, it's the discipline. Remind yourself that you're dedicated to this and you need discipline to do that. Sucks to say this, but I don't care if you don't enjoy this. I want you to enjoy the bigger picture for the most part, or at least be so enticed and incentivized by the identity you're going to have as you get closer to to the end result or the outcome.
I like that. My best friend and I,
who, of course, we wouldn't be best friends if we weren't both disciplined people who were ambitious and want to do well and want to serve others and that kind of thing. And I remember the first episode we ever had, he was my first guest. I asked him if he considered himself a disciplined person. And we had to talk about it, and we don't consider ourselves disciplined people. It's just who we are after a while. It's just how you conduct yourself. And we've talked about that so much on the podcast that I won't go off on that tangent. But one thing you said earlier that resonated with me was what you do in the morning, how you make yourself laugh. So I have something, it's a 10-minute meditation on Spotify that I found and started using in the morning before you get out of bed. And everybody talks about morning routines, and I've never been super big on them, especially after I had my child. I had to change everything. Anyway, this 10-minute guided meditation, she talks you through like wiggling your fingers and wiggling your toes and moving your hips side to side before you wake up and picture what you want your day to be. And and then you breathe in the positive energy. And I know that sounds foo-foo to a bunch of people listening, but it makes you giggle that you're doing this. Yeah. And I've sent it to clients and they're doing it now too. And so then we can have a laugh just exactly like you're talking about. And then I have this other client who's like, he just crossed 100 straight days of journaling. In his journal, he writes three things that he's grateful for every day.
Nice.
You know what that can do for somebody?
Yeah.
Do you have a meditation practice?
Yeah, my meditation practice is like my visualization.
Okay.
So, and that's like a very intimate moment for me, or those are intimate moments for me where it's like I've dialed in. And the way I dial into that is like comparable to like how I feel the arousal, the excitement, how I feel when I was sprinting.
Mm.
You know, like for a big race, I'll recreate that feeling so that it's more than just imagery. It's like I can smell it, taste it, feel it. My heart's racing for it.
We have a lot in common.
Yeah, and that's like where it's really rich versus like I'm watching it. I just need more sensory input with the visualization, and I find that that's the way that I manifest. There was a period where I felt stuck. Like I was in Edmonton living this comfortable life. I'll tell you, I'll swear when I say it, I fucking loved my clients, like every single one of them. I got to pick and choose who I worked with. And I would say this all the time. I am so, quote unquote, lucky to have this tribe that I have of like every single, even the little kids who I was coaching, like every single one of them had like a rich relationship with them. For example, one day something happened and I remember just feeling so down, and it was just like someone physically not doing well in my family. And I was just like, man, I was like worried. I went to work and it was like I almost was in tears because I was just so happy to see these people. Like I felt down. So it was like this. Usually I'd show up to work and I'd already be on a high, but I was just down here and I showed up to work and it just pulled me right back to where I usually was. And it was like, holy crap. Like that feeling that I had was like, man.
A lot of it's interaction with people.
Yeah.
Like my dad retired and was home for 6 months. He couldn't take it anymore. And he went and worked at a pool supply store selling like a pool supply, like maintenance store, but it just enabled him to interact with people who came into the store, and that was all he needed.
Yeah.
For, you know, he probably works 25 hours a week if I had to guess. But my dad is somebody who needs that interaction.
Yeah. I feel like I'm
one of those people.
Like when I switched to the online thing, there was a period where it was just like the interactions shifted big time. I'm working on the computer. I'm creating these digital products that are helping people, but I'm not talking to many people right now. And things got a little bit weird, but it's changed.
When we're in Houston, I have friends. We're deliberate about having lunch with each other because it's so important. You know, the regrets of the dying, it's always, I didn't maintain my relationships. And we can see it in our fathers. I don't know if your dad is the same way, but they don't have nearly as many friends as you and I will have when we're their age. And social media, of course, helps, but they just didn't, well, they didn't have studies to show that maintaining relationships is so important at the end of life. So what does it cost you to live here roughly? Like if somebody wanted to move here, that's let's say late 20s and work from home from here, average,
what are these?
Range.
I eat a lot. Or how about this? compared to most,
I'll bet.
My food bills can be pretty
I can see that, so yeah.
It's like I'm spending the easy rate, like spending about $3,000 a month on groceries.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's three visits to Sam's Club, and each time spending quite a bit.
That's a discount wholesaler.
And just ripping through the food. And I don't eat as much as I did when I was in Miami. I was 245 pounds in Miami. So, dude. Yeah, I really rip through food. I try not to eat out and prepare most of my food at home, which is another reason why the dating thing doesn't go so well.
Yeah.
I have some food restrictions, like dairy. Me and dairy don't agree a lot, and there's dairy in almost everything out here, you know, that I find. So that, and then rent, let's say $1,500 to $2,000, and I'm talking Canadian dollars, so excuse me, I guess, whatever, let's say $1,500 U.S., and then $2,500 or $2,300 USD on food.
So you could live here well on nobody's going to do that.
Yeah.
I would say you could live on $2,500 really well here.
Yeah.
Which is $30,000 a year.
Yeah. And so that's the thing, the quality of life here, like, it's pretty cool here.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Like, especially with you being this close to the water, to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does get pretty hot, but you can run into the shade or you can get home into the AC. If I signed a year lease, I'm sure I would probably be paying a lot less for, like, I have a friend who has a 2-bedroom right off of, he's on 1st and 12th. So he's right in the mix.
Yeah.
He's spending $1,000. He has a washer, dryer. I don't have a washer, so I take my stuff to the lavanderia, and that's...
It's like $7 to get a week's worth of clothes washed, roughly, right?
So, and I didn't bring that much stuff with me, so I'm like, I'm always washing. Sometimes it's not a big load of laundry, but I always have something at the lavanderia.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I can see that. I bring less and less stuff every time I come because I realize the athletic shorts that I'm wearing, I could get away with wearing these twice.
Yeah.
And... Yeah. You don't need more than about 4 or 5 t-shirts.
Yeah.
And like you said, there's a lavanderia, a place to wash your clothes where you just drop them off. They weigh them. They tell you it's going to cost less than 200 pesos, which is less than $10.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just don't even fool with it. Let them do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had some stuff come back though. It's like.
Really?
Like I.
Like ruined.
I had a t-shirt. Yeah. Like I got this luxury t-shirt in Miami.
And you let them wash it? See, I wouldn't have let them, but I know from experience.
Yeah, I was like, make sure that I hit it in the translator, Google Translate, memorized it, even showed it to them, like, please don't dry this. It wasn't the drying part. They didn't dry it. It came back. It was a black t-shirt, and it came back pink.
Oh, my goodness.
So, and it's like a $400 t-shirt.
Yeah, it's like, here, have it free. Yeah, and you're like, no, like, man, that's not what I'm talking about.
But whatever, it happens. Like, you just let go. I lost my Olympic ring, so I've learned to let go.
My God. You don't have a car.
No car here.
You wouldn't need a car here.
No. You just walk everywhere. I'd say, if anything, get a bike or a scooter or even a motorcycle if you really need to venture out. The taxi, commuting by taxi is fairly cheap.
Yep.
As long as you let them know that you know the prices.
Yes.
Because sometimes they can take advantage of you.
Oh, yes.
There's times where I've gone by taxi, like maybe 6 or 7 blocks, and they charge me 100 pesos. And I know that's not a lot, but it's a local gets in the cab, they're going to charge a local 30 pesos.
Yeah.
Or at most 50 pesos.
Yeah.
When I first got here, I was just excited. Like, oh, only 100 pesos?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, 5 rides later, and then you tell a buddy, I've been spending $100 to go this far. They're like, whoa.
You're paying New York City prices.
Yeah. It's like, no, not again.
I know. So, I've been there, dude. It's crazy. And they have been raising the prices slowly of everything. So like the haircut I used to get used to be 80 pesos. It went from 80 to 100 from 2015 to 2019. And now it's 150 pesos. That's nearly doubled.
Yeah.
So we'll things see. Are going getting up there. And that's out on 30th now. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm not getting a haircut on 5th. Yeah, there's no way.
Yeah, 30's still really close, though. 30's still bumping. Like, there's quite a few barbershops in that area, no?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
they all charge 150, 160 now.
But are they Mexican barbershops? I feel like those guys are, okay. I know there's a few shops where, like, they're, like, Cuban, Dominican.
Oh, well, now that you say that, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I've only ever gone to this one guy, and I liked him. You know, I really liked him, and he had 8 kids, and I felt like I wanted to support him.
Yeah.
And I could give him 100% tip if he was going to charge me $4 for a haircut. Well, now that he's charging me $8 for a haircut, he's getting a 50% tip, but I'm still saving 50% because I'd be paying 24
at
home.
That's the thing. Get yourself in trouble when you keep thinking about the prices at home.
Yeah.
Because the prices at home, they are the prices at home. Here, it's a different standard. So there are times where I find myself like in the cab and the guy says 100 pesos and I'm not going far at all. Like I can see my destination from the point where we're starting. And then you go, oh, it's only 100 pesos. So that works out to be whatever in Canadian dollars. Like that's significantly cheaper than at home. Yeah, but you're here because of that novelty of things being cheaper. So
exactly.
Don't have that mindset of, oh, I'm just going to throw money away.
Cause, I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah, because my first month here, I spent way more than I should have. Because I was just liberal, like, oh, boom, here's this tip, here's a $100 tip. I was, like, handing out 100 pesos.
Like a mafia boss?
Yeah.
Well, you know, propina used to mean 10%.
Yeah.
The first time I ever came here, that's what propina was. Propina means tip, for those listeners who don't know. And it was understood that it was 10%. And I think that was imported from the United States. Mm-hmm. But if you go to an all-inclusive resort, they ask you, where are you from? And you say the Netherlands or France. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get the same treatment as if you say Canada or the United States.
Yeah.
Because they know we're huge tippers in Canada, Europe. United States. Europe, they're not tipping you at all. So you get a different level of service. The other night, we went out to eat. We were on 30th at a little Thai place. I was paying with a card, and she came with the little booklet and the device to swipe my card. Inside the booklet, it had written, propina suggestion, 15% or 20%. The service was non-existent. They didn't do anything. And I said 10%. And she goes, oh, no, sir, 15% or 20%? And I said, I have a rule, like when I'm asked, and I try to use my best Spanish, but when I get asked for a tip, you usually don't get one.
Mm-hmm.
There is the most popular blogger in Mexico that I've gotten into arguments with. He believes that you should be tipping like 35%. And I tell him on his blog, what he's doing is, I call it the Warren Buffett rule. It's like, you've reached the top, you've climbed the ladder, and now you've left your ass in the air for everybody to kiss as you push the ladder down,
mm-hmm.
because other people want to retire here too.
Yeah.
If you start tipping 35%, they're going to start expecting that.
Yeah.
Not everybody's going to be able to afford it. And so I just think he needs to be more responsible. He's got the biggest blog in Mexico, so that's like million. He's probably got like 1 million monthly visitors or daily visitors. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But people are like, yeah, those people in Mexico, they're in poverty. They struggle.
Yeah.
If you have it, be generous. And I'm like, to me, it almost doesn't have anything to do with being generous. And I know that kind of makes me sound like an a-hole. I'm the guy, I have given a $100 tip at Waffle House. I've done that. I've had a girl run out of Cracker Barrel who told me her story of having lupus and cried and gave me a hug for the tip that I left. Like but I have another side of me that's like, don't ask for a tip. Don't suggest 15%, you know?
Offer it
based
on how things went. Yeah, I totally agree with you. It was at Mr. Sushi and same thing. This was a little bit different. The gentleman at Mr. Sushi was like there all the time, checking in on us, made some jokes, helped me with my Spanish. And it was a good interaction. And when it came time, I looked at the bill and it had 10, 15, 20%, you know, and he like pointed, you know, and I'm like, the 20. You know, this guy was awesome. Had he not asked, like, you know, my decision would probably have been the same for the 20. So he was really nice. I've been to some places where I'm like, I'm good to pay exactly what it costs for me to eat that food and leave.
Yeah.
You know, because like, I didn't even know anybody was working there kind of thing.
Right.
You
know? That's how this place was. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I didn't know who my waitress was.
Yeah. I've had some places that were not exactly like that in Canada, but some experiences like that in other countries, or even the country where I was born, where you're like, I'm going to pay for this food and get out. So I'm not going to call it like, not to say that it's a Mexico problem at all. But
first time I ever went to Paris, I was eating on the Champs-Élysées, and I'll never forget, the bill came. It was like $62, and I tipped probably 18%. And I watched them huddle up, and they all turned and looked at my girlfriend at the time and me and just giggled and laughed and snickered. And they thought, we were so stupid because they get paid a salary of like 50, 60 grand a year. And only an American would come and throw 18% on top of that.
So, I love it. That's actually a place, that's like my home away from home is Paris.
Really?
Yeah.
You've been there a lot?
Yeah, I love that place.
Really? Yeah. See, I do not.
Yeah, I speak French.
Oh, that helps.
I don't know. I just, there's something about Paris.
Really?
And the best part is anytime I get there, they open my passport and they look at my last name, which is Paris. And they're like, oh, you're home.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
God, it's weird to hear you say that, though, because my wife wants to know when we're going to go to Paris. And you know what I tell her? This is a-hole of me, but I tell her on our honeymoon.
Yeah.
You know, we already had our honeymoon, but maybe 10-year anniversary. I don't know. But I think Paris stinks. I think it's dirty. I think the people can be rude. I do like the architecture, but I've also done it once. And I feel like once you've done it once, you've done it enough. But the flip side of that coin is that you could spend all day in the Musée d'Orsay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I could. Like Impressionism, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And I'll never get through the Louvre.
There's so much to see.
Yeah, there's so much to see. Yes. Like I haven't been to Versailles. I haven't been to Jim Morrison's grave.
Yeah.
But I'm not dying to do those things. I'd rather go.
There's other places too, like outside of Paris, like well outside of Paris. Say France in general, like Saint-Tropez is really nice. Nice, Cannes.
Yeah.
I had a really good time in a remote area, southern France, called the Côte d'Azur.
Yep.
Or Boulogne, Saint-Gaffin.
I've heard of all these places, so I'm going to hit you up next time. I mean, if my wife ever wins the argument, and we go, I'm going to hit you up for some places to go.
I had such a good time there, and I'm a big fan of new style hip hop dance.
Okay.
But period, just dance in general, contemporary, ballet a bit. But more new style hip hop and contemporary, because it's like it almost seems like it's a hip hop dance has meshed with contemporary to create this new style. And it's the leaders of that style are in France.
Wow.
And they have a tournament called Juste Debout. And it's like the World Series of Dance that takes place over there. So I've become a big fan of a lot of the dancers within who compete in this, in these leagues.
No, I could see you killing that. I saw that post where you blocked out the front area where you're, and I knew you were an ass man by the way that you held your hands out. You held them out as like 20. I mean, as far as you could reach. And I'm like, you got to have a serious ass to dance with somebody. You see what I'm talking about when you visit the real Coach Powell on Instagram. But yeah, watch it. What is it you're doing? I forget.
The dance?
Preparing for something like a Caribbean.
Oh, yeah. It's an event called Caravana. It's
okay.
Like a carnival that they have it in all over the world. There's the one that I'm going to in the near future is in Toronto.
Okay.
It's called Caravana. The biggest one is in Trinidad and Tobago where my parents are born. It's called Carnival. They also have them in like Brazil. They have them in Grenada. There's one in Miami. It takes place in October. I was there for that one.
Nice.
I didn't go, but I was in Miami for that one. I think it rained that day. The day prior to that was my birthday. And we rented a yacht. And we were like out on the water and stuff. And it was just like a hectic day. I was on the jet ski and I flipped it like late at night. I wasn't supposed to be out on the jet ski like after sundown. The sun went down and I was doing donuts with a friend on the back who looked like was leaning as I was getting ready to do donuts in the other direction. So we just tipped the jet ski and we flipped it. But every time we would get back on, we'd flip it again. Mm. And then eventually it just filled with water. So we couldn't flip it. So we spent 15, 20 minutes in the water, maybe less time than that. And the yacht was like 120 footer. So everybody was on the back, like watching us in the distance. By the time we turn around and get to them, it's going to take forever. Luckily, a couple were on their jet skis late, and they saw us and picked us up. But the craziest part is that, like, a week later, I'm out at this park, I meet this girl, and she's like, I'm not walking in this park anymore, allowing my dog by the water. I said, why? She goes, I just saw a huge gator in the water. And I'm like, no way. It's the same body of water that we were in. And then every now and then, I have friends who are either on the boat or know about that experience, send me videos of like, hey, they found
gators in that spot.
Gators or sharks swimming around in that area. And me and this guy were literally just like, you know, just treading water in the dark.
Dude, we have lived parallel lives.
Yeah.
So did you think you were going to die at any point?
It was more of a disbelief that I was in the water, because that's my biggest fear. My biggest fear is like an open body of water and not being able to see the bottom or know what's in the water.
Sure.
We just started laughing. We were both like concerned for our safety, but we were laughing like, I can't believe this is... Like,
you knew you'd make it because you were strong enough to flip it and everything. Yeah.
Well, we'd flip it and then I'd get on and then he'd step on, boom, we'd go back.
And that is funny.
Yeah. And at one point I thought to myself, I was like, should I just leave it and then come back?
Yeah. Well, and you could hold on to it too.
Yeah. Right?
Or did you have life vests on?
Yeah, we had
life vests. Oh, okay. All right.
We had life vests on.
Okay. Yeah. So the reason I mentioned parallel lives is because I was in the Zambezi River, which is the river that divides Zambia and Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
And this was the first time that I had ever whitewater rafted. And the guy who's in the back, local guy, looked at the guy that was at the front left of the boat. There were six or eight of us in the boat. And then he's given instructions. He says, if you fall out of the boat, this is what you do. And they had taught us before we got in the boat what to do if you fall out, which is basically you walk the boat with your hands until you get to the end of it. And then that's where you come up. Obviously, it's kind of common sense, but they just want you to know if you've never whitewater rafted. And to whitewater raft for your first time in the Zambezi River is a big deal. I didn't know that, but this is level 4 rapids or whatever, which is high. So anyway, he stared at me as he's given these directions. And I'm like, oh, no, got a little nervous. Sure enough, as soon as we go, and this rapid must have been like 30, 40 yards long, we hit it. And it's like there must have been two rocks next to each other with a divot, like a crevice. And so it's like we smashed and I came flying out and did a couple of turns to where I didn't know which way was up. Mm-hmm. And there was no feeling the boat. I'm feeling like, where's the boat? And I thought, what stupid instructions to give, because what if the boat's nowhere to be found and you're in this rapid that's moving like 100 miles an hour? So anyway, I'm holding my breath forever. And when you hold your breath that long, you have to breathe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So I just took a breath and I just breathed in all sorts of water.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what else to do. What do you do when you can't hold your breath any longer? Mm-hmm. So finally, I come to the end of the rapid, which felt like 5 minutes. It was probably 15 seconds. I really don't know how long it was, but I wasn't prepared to take a breath. I went under right away. So by the time I come to and I'm looking around, I see the boat 100 yards behind me and everybody's in the boat like, where's Brad? Where's Brad? And I'm like, I'm over here. I'm over here. And I really thought I was going to die. I learned afterward that you can probably survive being unconscious underwater for like 2 minutes, up to 2 minutes or something like that. I didn't know that at the time. So I definitely thought I was going to die. Anyway, I look over, there's a croc sunning on the deck right like a rock. And I mean, a 10-12 foot crocodile. Yeah.
Holy shit.
I'm like, this is unbelievable.
What the fuck?
I couldn't believe
it. Yeah. Wow.
So very similar to your story.
Yeah.
All right. So let's do some fun questions. So since we just talked about death, let's start with this. Are you a godly person?
Yeah.
Okay, so you die, go to heaven, get a chance to ask God one question. What are you asking?
What will I return as?
What will I return
if
as?
If I'm reincarnated, what can,
I like that.
I have a choice?
I like that, yeah. Well, if you had a choice, would you do life over again at that point?
Yes.
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 You don't get to know what you know now. That's not an option.
Yeah.
But you do it again.
I'd do it again.
Okay. With social media apps and being a creator as you are, we know you have to spend money. What's the most you've ever spent to advertise a particular post? Like to get the word out about a particular post?
I've been cheap with that. Like the most that I've spent is like $40.
Okay.
You know, $40 on a post.
So I had a guest recently who said that he's trialed with different amounts. And he said, unless you spend like $20 a day, your shit won't get seen.
Yeah.
And he said, that's the only way he's been able to generate a hot lead. And I said, what's a hot lead? And he said, them filling out a form. And I said, yeah, that's a hot lead.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody's going to take the time to fill out.
Yeah.
That's good information for creators to know how much you need to spend. Cause I've done that too, where I've spent like $6 a day here and you think you get, you got it. They make you spend money.
I posted my link for my VIP coaching in my bio. I was like nervous to do it because once again, it's like just working with it's like the word of mouth community. But I posted it and like people were just filling it out. And I had to close it.
Really? You got overwhelmed?
Yeah.
Interesting. So I was in that situation recently. So yeah. I'm a coach on Tuesday, Wednesday. I opened up Thursday because I had so many requests.
Yeah.
But that's tough to turn people away because you want to help everybody.
I'm working on systems right now with the company just to be able to handle more people. Mm. That's where I'm at right now.
Like delegating?
Yeah, delegating. So I have two nutritionists and two trainers. Perhaps I'm giving too much information, but they're going to be helping me. So I have staff instead. Because like my manpower was very limited before. I would work heavy in the summertime during the off season, particularly like hockey off season. Outside of that, I can get a ton of work done, but there's only so much that I can do. I can take on 10 private training clients, 10 new clients. And then once they get acclimated with how I coach and the systems and their lifestyles in order, then I can open the floodgates and take on a few more people. But that takes some time. That's like 10 people takes about 6 months. So then that ceiling boom is right there. But then you add staff, you add people can help you with certain tasks.
If you ever need
everything top to bottom.
If you ever need a virtual assistant, someone who is inexpensive from the Philippines, let me know.
Okay. We'll definitely.
I've got several resumes for you of good, solid people.
Even like video editing, like I do all that stuff myself, record the content, take it home, edit, voiceover, boom, 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 boom.
Unless you enjoy doing it, I would offload that.
Some of it is fun. Some of it is fun. But then other times I'm like, oh my gosh, I look at the time. I'm like, I just spent 3 hours sitting here putting together this video for social media. Sometimes when it doesn't grab, you're like,
yes. I had a client send me a list of tasks that he wants to outsource just yesterday, and I'll let you look at it. Maybe I'll send it to you. But what he's going to have me do is send it to the girl. So the first virtual assistant I ever had started her own little boutique firm, and she's got all of her friends, and their dream job is to work for an American or a Canadian. Because if you live in the Philippines, there's 7,100 islands. If you live on 7,046 of them that don't have tourism, $5, $7, $9 an hour, that's huge. Their dream job is to work for an American or a Canadian. So
a lot of people who need a virtual assistant.
Well, it's not only like I need, it almost feels free. And to wake up in the morning and have it in your inbox is a beautiful thing because they work on the other side of the world. That's a good feeling. So I'm wiggling my toes and looking at my inbox and I'm like, oh, yeah. So have you ever spent money on an app?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You say, yeah, like you've done a lot.
Well, I spend money on apps, like especially like my competitors. I spend money, you know, apps just to see what they're using, see what they're doing.
Yeah.
Video editing software, apps for my phone, because I can edit while I'm on the road or I'm sitting on the plane, you know, things like that. Even like meditation apps.
Calm, Headspace.
Yeah. So it's like $12.99, boom, take it.
You know what? I've asked that question to more than one guest, and I've always thought to myself, I've never bought an app, and you just said meditation. I bought meditation apps.
Yeah, so it's like,
I just realized I'm in that bag too.
You're in that bag.
What's the most beautiful place you've ever been?
Oh, man. Part of me, you know, like saying Australia, Melbourne, Australia.
Mm.
But Singapore is a close. Singapore is at the top. That was nice.
That's so interesting because my wife wanted to visit Singapore more than once and we've skipped over it.
Yeah.
Like being in that area because I don't want to. And the reason is because I have this sense that a lot of it is manufactured beauty.
Yeah.
Like fake fountains and fake trees. And is that?
It's a bit of that.
Yeah.
It's a bit of that.
Yeah.
I remember a very serene scene for me was going to the track every day and looking up at the jungle. And it was like, where do I ever see this? I'm at a track, this really nice track of training. Mm-hmm. And I look up. It looks like a rainforest looking down on me. And it was just beautiful. Every day that I go to the track, we'd go at 10 a.m. It would pour. So you'd have to like cover up for about 15 minutes. And then it would just be so hot after that. You could taste the condensation. And that would last for like an hour or maybe less. And then it'd just be super hot. Like you need to be in the shade, but you're out there running and feel like you're accomplishing everything you need to accomplish.
Yeah.
And then you look up and it's just like, you just wanted to stay there.
Yes.
And that, I think that was rich enough for me to have like such a good time in Singapore. Australia, because I met a girl. that helped the experience. And I was there for Commonwealth Games. I got a medal, a bronze medal. Yeah. So the experience altogether was awesome. And I met one of my best friends at Commonwealth Games, Angela White, a Canadian Olympian, four-time Canadian Olympian.
That's awesome.
It was a good time in Australia.
You made some good places.
Yeah.
So. Have you been to New Zealand?
Just the airport.
Because the South Island of New Zealand, I would put up there in the top five.
Yeah.
Most beautiful places. And I've been a few places.
Yeah, just to Auckland. I definitely want to get back out to Oceania. Like, I'll do Asia, Oceania altogether.
We actually started in Cairns, C-A-I-R-N-S.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Australia.
Yeah.
And drove the entire Gold Coast down to Sydney.
Oh, wow.
And there are some beautiful places there. Yeah. Wow. But we'll be in touch if you ever want to do all that stuff. Because I've never been to Melbourne.
Yeah.
I would love to do it.
Melbourne was awesome.
So you had narrowed it down to Bali and Playa del Carmen.
Yeah.
I love it here. I've been here a few dozen times. Took Spanish immersion classes here. I even got married here.
Wow.
But I still would have chosen Bali. So.
Proximity.
That answers the question.
Yeah. The investment was not financial investment, but the investment of time. Like, I was concerned.
It's 22 hours to get there.
Yeah,
yeah. From here.
Man, like, going to Bali, like, I'm not going for 2 months. Like, I got to stay there for six. I'm not going that far. I was upset when it took forever to get to Australia.
Yeah.
And then I was there for a month. And coming home, I was just like, next time I come this far, I'm staying for like the freaking year. Because that flight sucks. One leg was 13 hours. Mm-hmm. And that was like LA to New Zealand. It was a 13-hour flight. And I had already done two flights before that and then one after.
See, I'm a weirdo. We have a child now, so we have to take that into consideration. We can't fly that far. So it's going to almost have to be Europe instead of across the Pacific the next time we fly. I was telling you I was invited to speak in Bali. I can't go because of my child. But I like long flights. I love reading, thinking, journaling.
Yeah.
I'm upset when they're over. And that makes me a weirdo, I'm sure.
There is something nice about the long flight. When the flight's like, I'm flying Toronto to New York and it's like this short flight, you're like, oh gosh. Yeah. But when it's a longer flight, I find like you can start to kick away some of the things that, some of the stressors perhaps. Mm. And it's like, it's easy to zone in on something.
Yeah.
There's not much distraction.
No Wi-Fi.
You know, so then you're like, boom, you get something done. Like that's the time where I'm like destroying a book, not ripping it in half, but like ripping through a book, reading
or
it.
Or writing something.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Yeah. If you could meet one person alive today, who would it be?
Oh my gosh. There's a number of individuals. Some people might get like nervous when I say this, but it's like, I would love to pick Malcolm X's brain. I want to know where he was coming from, because I know they say like before his assassination, he had gone to Africa and he had changed his beliefs on certain things. So I want to know what he experienced in Africa that had him, let's say, become like an enemy of his former faction.
Have you been to Africa?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, closest I've been is the Middle East, Northeast Africa.
I have been, and I've been to remote parts of Africa. And what I came away with is the same feeling that I did when I read How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Yeah, yeah.
No other book have I felt as strongly about recommending to other people as that book. Going to Africa, no other place have I recommended to Americans. You've got to go to Africa by the time you die.
Yeah.
I just wish everybody could have that experience.
Yeah.
Because it will change you.
Yeah.
It has to.
Yeah, it's on my list. It's definitely on my list. Very close to the top. Should be at the top.
So you dodged the question.
Oh, yeah. So who would I? Malcolm X.
He's dead.
Yeah, you said someone who's dead.
One person alive today, who would it be?
Oh, alive. Excuse me. Oh, my goodness. Sorry. I thought you said who's not alive today. That's what I was like. Oh, my gosh. Oh, one person.
Alive. Right now.
Boom, 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 boom. Who would it be? I'll go with the guys from Earn Your Leisure. Like one of the guys, Earn Your Leisure, EYL, is a group of guys who are like talking about financial literacy. And they seem to be really good, like enough that billboards are up in Times Square. They've been invited on Ellen DeGeneres' show and stuff. And they're these, I think, two guys from New York. It's a group of three, but they're just, I just love how the way that they disseminate the information about where to put your money. So, and about financial literacy, because I wasn't taught any of that stuff. Like I was very bad with money. Prior conversation felt guilty about asking people for money in exchange for my services, things like that. I just really like their spin on things and how they they divulge the information.
That is such a great answer, because I've never heard of them, and this show started as that. But I never, they say the niches are in the riches, or the riches are in the niches. I'm not doing this for money.
Yeah.
And a lot of what I do is help to set people up for growth in all aspects of life, but primarily build wealth so that they can gain financial freedom, so that they can do what I'm doing.
Yeah.
They're after time wealth is what they're after, not just money wealth. And time wealth to me means you wake up in the morning and you can do whatever you want with whoever you want for however long you want, etc. So the podcast is kind of expanded to encompass more things than just build wealth. It's more of a self-development podcast, I would say, because people get a lot of good information, like what you just shared. That's great information. If I gave you $100,000 and you had to invest it in Spotify, Tesla, or Bitcoin, where are you putting the money?
Bitcoin.
$100,000, Spotify, Tesla, or Bitcoin, you'd put it all in Bitcoin.
If I had to put it all in one area, then yes, I would go with Bitcoin.
Okay. There were a lot of Bitcoin people in Miami, I bet.
Yeah. A lot. And then when when there was that crash, so to speak, there was a lot of vacancies.
I would imagine.
A lot of people just disappeared.
Like, how many?
A lot of clubs got quiet.
Yeah.
I have friends who were working in the hospitality industry or own spaces, and they're like, wow, our servers are suffering. Like,
no more bottle service.
Yeah, there was a hit.
Wow. Yeah. Would you talk to people that would say, I have 99% of my net worth in Bitcoin?
Yeah.
That happens a lot.
In my building alone.
Wow.
And they were like 18-year-olds.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Spending their money like unwisely, buying $1,000 steaks at Baoli that come out in briefcase with the gold around it.
Unbelievable.
And then all of a sudden they're gone. They're like, I'm heading back to heading back to Wyoming.
Bloomington, Indiana. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Because Miami and Puerto Rico, I would say, became the hotbed for where those young Bitcoin millionaires went.
Yeah.
So you probably met a lot of those.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. But you never became one yourself, did
no,
you?
No.
Don't own
and if I
crypto?
Did, I wouldn't tell anyone.
Yeah, I know, right?
Hey, man, let me hit you up for Zoom.
Right. No. But you're not a crypto guy?
No, I can't call myself a crypto guy.
No.
I've like dabbled in that arena. Not a big gambler. So that risk was like, it was up there. But anyways, during COVID, I sustained my lifestyle for about 5 months playing around in that area. Can't say that I was like really good at it, because if I was, I would have continued.
Mm-hmm.
A large part of it, I felt like I was okay because of the people who I was listening to.
Mm.
So the folks from Earn Your Leisure, EYL, there's like other guys, Wall Street Trapper. There's a few others, a guy by the name of Him500. I was paying for like mentorship from some of these people. It was in their programs. So some of it was like copy and paste on top of like reading. The stocks, it's just as volatile. Certain stocks, but I found it was easier for me to play around in the crypto arena.
Do you have a favorite book?
Yeah, favorite book is The Kybalion by Hermes Trismegistus. Basically, it's just talking about the seven hermetic principles. First hermetic principles, the principle of mentalism, that all is mind, the universe is mental. You have the second one, the principle of correspondence, that all is connected. Then there's the principle of polarity, that everything has its poles or its duals, its opposites. Principle of rhythm, everything has a swing. There's a swing to everything, or a cycle to everything. As you go down the list of all of these principles, you go to the second one, they're all connected. But it's like you start looking at life with each one of those lenses. Like, all is mind, the universe is mental. Oh, okay, like we hear these aphorisms, like the things you give energy to are what you are going to be attracting. Where your energy goes, things grow. Okay, this principle of mentalism, everything is connected, correspondence. I'm connected to you, you to me. Then you can look at the principle of cause and effect. Okay, well, my interactions with you are corresponding, and they can influence in such a way that it can change the cycle of life.
The butterfly effect.
Yeah, I just fell in love with the book, and I've been on a few podcasts, and like that's the book that always comes. It sounds like it's the only book that I've read, but that's the book that stands as like one of the most solid reads.
That name it again so they don't have to rewind?
The Kybalion. Kybalion.
By Hermes.
Yeah. I mean, it's really not by Hermes, but someone who's just kind of broken down these principles.
Who's funnier, Eddie Murphy or Richard Pryor?
Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy or Dave Chappelle?
Dave Chappelle.
What's the most you've ever gambled and won?
A monogamous relationship for a threesome. No, I'm kidding.
Good answer. Good answer. A monogamous relationship for the most he's ever gambled and won.
Sorry. I should have said a boring monogamous relationship.
Why do you think men have much less testosterone than they did 15 years ago?
Is that actually true? They say it. Who knows if it's like that's what they're trying. They're trying to push that narrative. It's like an example. Okay, they'll say like black on black crime is at an all time high. And then you look at white on white crime or Asians on Asians. And actually, I don't even like the crayon theory of like black, white. But if you're living in the same community, who else are you going to commit a crime against? Yeah. And it's just as common in all the other communities. It's just that narrative being pushed. So then it draws your attention there. And then you're like, oh my God, that's where the problem is. Mm-hmm. And then it just precipitates people's actions. So I feel like there's a potential that they say, hey, testosterone levels are dropping. They're at an all-time high, all-time low. I don't know if it's true or not, but I do know that the more they say it, the more it will become true.
Because I think people are. What would it be attributed to?
Stress, more stressors in the environment, or more things for people to stress about. And I don't just mean in the environment, like in the air pollutants. Could even be social media and the problem that people have of comparing themselves to others now, like too many people. The amount of people we see now versus who we saw before is astronomically increased. And then now it's like, oh my gosh, my girlfriend's looking at a guy with abs, or the boyfriend's looking at a girl with a big butt. Mm-hmm. I haven't been in that situation before. My girlfriend was like, I noticed you like this girl's picture. And the girl's like half naked. This is a girl that I knew and I was just proud of her. She looks good, but I was also proud of her for posting this implied nude because I knew she had problems with her identity or who she saw herself as. And you know, she was kind of ashamed of her body.
Do you have a bucket list? Things you wish to do before you leave this earth?
Yeah, actually, I wanted to attend here. Wanted to attend a Mexican wrestling event. So I think I need to go to like Monterrey or Mexico City to do that. Okay. But I've befriended a Mexican wrestler who's popular here, Dr. Wagner Jr. He actually wants to train with me. So we'll figure it out. I'll get down to either Monterrey or Mexico City, do some training with him, maybe even say, hey, teach me some things.
Yeah,
maybe make an appearance.
Love it.
That's one thing on the bucket list.
You know, Tim Ferriss asked this one question to everybody on his podcast. If you could get a message out to people on a billboard, what would it be?
Do it like you mean it.
Do it like you mean it.
Yeah. So Nike has Just Do It. Mm-hmm. And I like that. And I'm kind of plugging myself right now and something that's going to happen in the future or a project that's coming up. Mm-hmm. But Nike's Just Do It. It's an incomplete sentence. If I could say that, or incomplete motto. So I added like you mean it because it's like, just do it. Well, how? Just do it. Get yourself involved in it so much so that you're very present. So the
sounds synonymous with do everything like you do anything.
Yeah.
Everything similar.
Like you do anything. Yeah. Yeah.
Synonymous.
Yeah. So it's like, just like you mean it. And so I played around with the Nike logo. It's, you know, got the swoosh. The head of the swoosh, I've replaced it with a thumb. So it's like a thumbs up. Yeah. And it's got two meanings in there. One, it's kind of like highlights the influence that social media is having on our lives right now. Like the thumbs up like thing. Some people seeking validation, but also supporting someone. Yeah. Thumbs up, like good job. And then the other part of it is like, I now take the like and I'm blending it into something else. Like you mean it. So
do it like you mean
it. So Nike has Just Do It. And then I haven't used that in my graphics. I just have the thumb and it says like, and then you mean it.
Love it.
So instead of Nike, I've got a bunch of merch.
Yeah.
And that's going to be, I'm going to be dropping that soon.
Oh, that's the side hustle you mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool.
I used to upcycle clothing and footwear. Like I would take vintage clothes and I would just give it new life. And I've had 3 fashion shows in Canada. Pretty good following. I've got a big NBA player who's a friend of mine who's promised to, or I shouldn't say promised, but is going to be wearing some of my stuff at some point.
Very good.
So he's in the playoffs right now.
Have I heard of him?
Possibly, yeah. Rui Hachimura. plays for the Lakers.
Okay.
Yeah, so put up 29. I think I was telling you, yeah, put up 29 points in game one and 20 points in game two. He got traded from Washington. I think he's happy where he is right now. Yeah.
Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah. Man. We were neighbors in Miami.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, saw a lot of each other, hung out.
You know, that's the thing I tell people. Sometimes you have to spend money to get around a higher caliber of person, but be deliberate about it.
Yeah.
So usually I'm using it in the context of a gym. Like mm-hmm. in Houston, you can go work out at the $10 a month Anytime Fitness.
Yeah.
Or you could spend $85 or $200 and get around a higher caliber of person and befriend those people. So spend money deliberately is what I tell them.
Yeah.
Be smart about how you spend it.
And they say don't go cheap on education.
Mm.
Don't go cheap on education or food.
Mm.
But I say food is education too.
Huh?
Yeah. And you need education to choose good food.
Well, you know, the three biggest expenses are housing, transportation, and food.
And food, yeah.
$3,000 a month is going to be hard for people to...
Yeah.
I mean, if you had a family and you were feeding them like you were feeding yourself.
But I'm like, I'm going to the track and I'm going to the gym. And I'm trying not to lose weight. Like, I've lost weight. You know, so you can tell, like, my energy expenditure is higher than my consumption.
Yeah, you would have... It's easy for you to have a calorie deficit.
Yeah.
And you need to...
Yeah. I'm, like, stabilized at 225, but I was, like, 235 and a bit malnourished before I arrived. Just because my life over the 2.5 weeks was pretty crazy between New York to Toronto and then eventually here.
Mm.
Like, it wasn't stable. You know, Miami was stable for me, and then it was, like... Boom, here, there, boom, 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 out.
That's the thing, man. Eating right is so time-consuming.
Yeah, yeah.
It really is.
It is.
Folks, if you want to visit him, as he said, he is Coach Powell on Instagram.
The real Coach Powell
on Instagram. And as you know, you can find me at @man_overseas. I'm on Instagram, Twitter. My email is contact.manoverseas@gmail.com. If you're interested in coaching on the physical nutrition side, Coach Powell's your man. If you're on the business, investing, relationship side, I might be your man. Check us out. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you, folks, for listening. I really appreciate it. I don't have a show without you. Thank you.